The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it at Studio Night Pants. I am Ryan Sickler, and I know you want me to say at your mom's house. Hell, I want to say it. I said it for a year and a half. Of course, it's difficult for me to even say it, but I tried something different. I like Stu. I'm in the what would you say? In the vein and honor of your mom's house with Studio Jeans, I thought we'd go Studio Night Pants. Okay. Let's try something. All right. I know you're going to say at your mom's house because I did make a nice little ringy catchphrase. But anyway, thank you all for your support. Thank you for being here. Please go subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/rsickler. Also, make sure you're subscribed to the Facebook fan page as well. Get over there. We're going to have content there as well. And if you haven't submitted your story or subscribed to the Patreon yet, please go do that. The new show is called The Honeydew with Y'all, where I highlight the lowlights with y'all. You can submit your email at honeydewpodcast@gmail.com. Go to ryansickler.com, honeydewpodcast.com. You can subscribe there. I've already talked to an old friend whose dad came out in his late 40s. I talked to a girl who had two pussies. I've talked to quite a few people. We're going to be bringing it to y'all every Thursday. It goes up on Patreon. All right. And I can't thank you again for all of your support. Merch, Night Pants Nation. I mean, y'all are fucking rolling out. I hope everybody's comfortable as shit, because I swear to you, they are quality night pants. Go to honeydewpodcast.com or ryansickler.com in the merch store. Get yourself a pair of night pants. I record here at the Santa Monica Music Center, and I can't thank you again. There's so many of you have helped. The messages, the donations, everything. The Honeydew Strong shirt, of course, I can't forget that. That's also available in the merch store. Proceeds from that shirt go to benefit the Santa Monica Music Center. And if you're out there and you're looking for lessons, go to santamonicamusic.com. Get a lesson. Get a lesson for you. Get a lesson for the kids. Hell, take lessons with your kids. Connect with your damn kids. Okay. Learn something. Y'all can play guitar together. You know, maybe you're into woodwinds. I don't know. Maybe you like the clarinet. Grab the licorice stick. Go play something. Okay. If you're in Indiana and you want your kids or yourself to be trained by a kick-ass Los Angeles musician, this is the place to go. They're a family-owned business, been here for 50 years, serving the community. They do great programs. You're going to hear about all that. All right. Because the show is all about highlighting the lowlights, and I always say these are the stories behind the storytellers. And today's guest is my good friend and owner of the Santa Monica Music Center, ladies and gentlemen, Lana Negrete. Welcome to the Honeydew Podcast, Lana.
Thank you, Ryan.
I appreciate you being here. We're going to talk about everything that happened. You know, there's been a crazy time in our lives, beginning with Corona. Mm-hmm. So before we get to that, we're going to tell your story. You're a great friend of mine. You're so good to my daughter's mother, family, my daughter, everybody. But I've always fascinated. You've always made me laugh my ass off over there. Like when I first met you, I knew you were cool when I was like, I'm trying to stroll my daughter. And you were like, oh, he's funny. He's funny. So I was like, okay, Lana gets it.
I'm just kind of
But anyway, let's go back to the beginning for you. You're born and raised here in Santa Monica. Yep. And just tell us your story.
Born and raised. Station 26 is what I like to say. That's not where I was born, but I was definitely raised by the beach, Station 26.
Is that the lifeguard station?
That's the lifeguard station, okay. Which, by the way, the original one got partially burned, so they replaced it with another one. But yeah, my mom came here when she came to America from Trinidad when she was a teenager, 16 or so. By the time they went from Florida to Georgia, she experienced a lot of racism in Georgia. She was not allowed to swim in the pool.
Because I know your mom. Now, yeah. It's funny because Annie is also here, by the way, and Annie's going to be joining us for part of the story, too. Annie thought you were a white lady. I go, mm-mm. No, no.
I know.
No.
Those highlights are good. I mean, my mom is from Trinidad, and she's West Indian. But
your mom's not. She wasn't allowed to swim in the pool. Was she? Because I don't. Your mom doesn't look like a
you haven't
dark,
met my grandpa.
Okay.
So her dad's darker than any for sure, and so they called them a straight-haired N-word, and that's
okay.
That
was so, the so word. Seeing your mom with your dad was like you're not
with my grandpa. You
I mean grandpa. Yeah, sorry, her dad.
But it was
dad.
Actually just seeing my mom because she's dark. She's just older now. Maybe I'll show you older pictures of her. But my mom was dark, long black hair, and there was seven of them, her siblings.
Because you do the accent.
I know.
And the first time I heard you do it, I was like, oh, it's a good impression. Then I realized, oh, no, that's not an impression. That's an impression of her mom.
No. What I love about that is that we grew up calling our vagina a pokey, because that's what they call it, pokey and toti. And I remember figuring out that it was actually a vagina. And so then I told my friends, like, we would go around and ask boys, like, so do you have a pokey or a toti? And then if they answered it, you know, like, I got a pokey. Or what do you like better? You know, they said, I like a toti. But yeah, my mom, we grew up with a little bit of the accent. It was already fading away. She really wanted to assimilate into American culture.
Why? Why did your mom come here? Or why did her family come
here? They lived in Karenny Village. So if some people don't even know where Trinidad and Tobago is. It's a small island in the Caribbean. I've been. Yeah, we went back and I was like, this is miserable. They repaired patches in their, I don't want to say hut, but where they lived, it was like shanty town. They repaired patches with, her job was to get cow dung and mud and you mix it and that's how you repair the patches in your house. She didn't get shoes till she was like 10. So, you know, she was from a little village. They bathed in a pipe in the road. She killed chickens.
For real?
Yeah, for real. Like that's, they went to the bathroom in an outhouse. Look up Karenny Village. So.
Isn't it crazy that like, it seems like so long ago, but it's not. No. None of this shit is so long ago. That's none of it.
We laughed when she tried to be vegetarian. We're like, you used to snap chickens' necks. She's like, it was organic.
Wow.
But she came from a super rural background and she came here all smiles. That's that Caribbean smile and was horrified by American culture from day one. So
why did they come? Thinking for a better life. Okay.
I mean,
and they got straight to Georgia.
Well, they went to Florida first. They had to go in sections, you know, to find work. And my grandmother, my mom would clean motel rooms. Mm-hmm. And then when they went to Georgia. They lived in the house in Georgia. I don't know if you know the film from the 60s and 70s, Big Ben, where the bear.
Yeah, of course.
They lived in, it was a rundown, dilapidated, you weren't supposed to live in there. There was probably mold we're later going to find out.
Get your shit, we're moving to the Walton house.
Exactly. They lived in that condemned house.
Yeah, right.
So they let this poor little family come in. People just couldn't
figure. After the show?
After the show was over, it was like all run down. It's like no trespassing. Disease ridden.
I'm going to go see Uncle Charlie at the little house on the prairie house. I'll be back. Oh, you can make a living out of living off those old sets.
There was parts of the house that you couldn't even go into. So, I mean, they lived there. My mom has some great stories.
That's crazy. Really? They lived in that house?
They lived in that house. It was all they could afford. I mean, people couldn't figure out what they were racially. Like, they were super dark, but they weren't black, but they weren't, you know, white, and they weren't Mexican, they weren't Indian. They're like, what the hell are these people with this Caribbean accent? So,
I mean, I grew up a white kid, and I didn't know. I first knew it was all through soccer. That's soccer in Maryland was where I started to see diversity in Dominican kids, and we had and then with the Baltimore Blast, they had this guy, I'll never forget his name, was Richard Chinapu, and he was from Trinidad.
Chinapu?
And that's when I learned, because he was fucking good, you know, and I'm like, oh, and you look at the little bios and
the magazines.
He probably
said Chinapu. He probably Richard Chinapu. That's how they say it. But yeah, my mom, you know, by the time that she got to California, she was 18. And I mean, I think she met my dad at 17 and a half, but we won't go into that. And my dad's like 13 years older than her.
And oh, really?
Yeah. And she was into American culture.
17 and a half.
She was. That's the truth. Can't arrest him now. He's four wives later. No, but he was a musician, a drummer, and he was playing at Charlie Brown's. Anybody who's been around a long time will know what that is. My dad had opened up Clockwork Orange. That was the movie.
Okay, so wait. So hold on. So your mom's family relocates out here.
Yes, and you know where they live?
At 18. Or does she go on her own?
No, the whole family came. They all came together.
First,
they all lived in the motel on Rose and Lincoln right next to La Cabana.
Nuh-uh.
Yep, five kids and two adults, the seven of them. They cooked. They had a hot plate that you would, or not a hot plate, a stove thing you use for camping that they would put on the back of the toilet. And that's how they would cook their meals in the motel. And my mom, my dad, my grandpa, seven of them, seven. Five kids. There's a whole history between, like, my, I have a half black uncle because my grandma at 15, she was a little hussy. She had a kid young. And then, so that he's also an additional, uncle that we grew up with later on, like they sent for him. And then she has another half brother. My grandma had a couple kids before, like apparently really young. Back then it was okay. You know, you had your period and you were ready to have babies. Yeah, so
that's what Mother Nature said.
But the five of them, like my uncles and my aunts, they lived in that motel. My grandpa was a taxi driver. At some point he got a job. I don't know how, being in a driver's ed teacher, one of those cars. Yeah. I don't know. He drives how, cause he drives a two, he used to drive a 2 feet. He's not here anymore. But yeah, my mom, they lived there right here and we still live right up the street from it. Then they lived on Copeland Court, which is behind Blick, which now those properties are worth like millions.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
And they kicked themselves because they had an opportunity to buy it back then. They were so afraid, you know, immigrant family. My mom met my dad being a groupie at going out with her friends. That
so around the
here.
Santa Monica, LA area, around your dad was already here.
Oh, yeah. He was here. He came from Canada and he has a crazy story.
Yeah, I want to hear it because your dad came from Canada, but he's Cuban,
okay, so
right?
He's born and raised Canada, but their background is Spanish, Spaniard, and Cuban through, like, they had Cuban cigars. We had Fernandez. We have the little, like, labels.
So his parents are from Cuba? They went to Canada?
No. Spanish, Spaniard. I think at some point somebody went to Cuba, and so there was family born there, but it's really from, like, Spain, and then his mother has English background and all that. So he's Toronto. That's where he was. And he had a child.
So another great diverse city. Toronto's
Yeah,
great.
Toronto's yeah. diverse. So he had a son at 15, but I'll cut to that later on. Nobody knew about it. It was, like, back then, she got pregnant young, and the girl he got pregnant, that her mother ran a house for girls who got pregnant out of wedlock.
And they would, like, what?
So they,
while you're here.
So they, like, hid her away, had the baby, and quickly put it up for adoption. And so, like, my grandmother, apparently my dad's
Can
mom,
we come back to that?
Because we'll
I don't know
back
if you've ever
that,
connected.
Because he found us.
Okay. He found you.
Rolled up. It's an ongoing joke in the store. Someone's here. Are you one of Chico's kids?
He was like, Al Gore, tell me when that internet shit's ready, bro. I'm ready to go.
Oh, my God. So, anyways, my dad was a crazy musician, the black sheep of the family. We have a real Catholic family. Everyone on my dad's side was, you know, pretty straight-laced, you know, volunteer and in the church. And my dad was, like, from the jump, he was the drummer. I mean, he was the rock and roll kid of the family. So when he left Toronto, he went all over. I mean, my dad played on the stage when they used to have live drums for strippers to go out. You know, my dad played the, like, titty swing beat or whatever it was. That was my dad. And then, like, dated some of the girls. Like, boom, chicka, boom. That was my dad's.
What size are these titties? Double D's? I got it. And 2, 3, go!
That was my dad. That's Chico.
So Chico. I love that his name's Chico. What's his real name? What's
Paul,
his birth name?
But no one's called him that. He got Chico. He's Chico Fernandez because of a baseball player. My dad's little. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's at one point, he might have been 5'2", 5'3".
He's a
baseball.
Jockey.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, he did photography as a kid. He did play drums. By the time he got here, he was still doing some photography. You'll see it if you ever go to his place. He just liked capturing things, you know, like a homeless man sleeping or something like that, whatever it was. But he also liked to do headshots for anyone, any musicians he played with. So my dad's goal was, you know, to be in that entertainment industry. So he makes
And what's he play? Drums,
drums,
right?
Yeah. Drums and timbales. He plays Latin jazz and American jazz. So he ended up hooking up and having a couple kids with one of them stripper girls.
Yeah.
And she left him. They lived in a
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have a half brother and a half sister, another half brother, the one that we found out about later, and then my full brother. And then we don't know. We're always like, anybody
now,
else
I've
out
met
there?
Your brother.
Yes.
Have I met anyone else?
I don't think so. It's Rhonda. No. Maybe. You might have met Rhonda. I don't think so. She's in Oxnard, so she doesn't come down a lot. But when he got with her, they lived in a, like an RV thing that, like, attaches to a car. And she left him one night with the kids, with toddlers.
Just in that?
Yeah. He's like, you got the car and now I don't have anywhere to go. So he was stuck with two kids, like babies, changing. He said he was changing their diapers on the side of like the 60 freeway, you know, on the hood of a car.
Can't change them on the toilet. Yeah. Your mom's back there cooking.
She left him for one of the other guys at the strip club.
That's right. I mean,
he has stories about dealing with the mafia people and all this kind of stuff in there. She was connected in that way. She was like Italian, whatever. So then he traveled with them a little bit. He ended up sending them to Toronto for a little bit to have my grandma take care of him while he like situated himself. And then he met Lisa, his second wife, who's African-American. She raised my half brother and half sister for the most part.
I remember talking to your dad about how he liked black girls, and I was like, I'm right there with you, Chief.
And he likes to tell everybody. That's all speaking of Black Lives Matter. I'm like, okay.
Even I'd say all the time, like, I always thought I'd end up with a mixed kid. I just didn't think it'd be somebody else's.
Well, my dad doesn't discriminate because we got my mom from Trinidad, Italian, Lisa, and then Elena, who he's with, who's Filipino. So
his second wife, this was a wife he married.
Yeah, second wife, okay. Lisa. And she pretty much raised Rhonda and Paul, who are my half brother and half sister. So they were together for a long time. And then at some point, I think they.
So wait, I'm sorry. Lisa raised the stripper who's bounced kids.
Yeah, who's bounced kids. Right. Exactly.
And
she didn't come into the picture till way later after death. I think someone like found Ron and them. So then he breaks up with Lisa and he's now on the road again. He's in Vegas. He's playing, you know, nightclubs, whatever, all this stuff. My dad's also, by the way, now been in bands that are open for Dionne Warwick at the time. I mean, he's played with a lot of greats. So he's played later on even with, you know, like in the same lineup with Tito Puente and Celia Cruz. So I remember as a kid being behind the stage at Hollywood Bowl with those people in the background.
That's great, because I went to a Playboy Jazz Festival one time, and I watched Tito Puente and Sheila E. came out. It was fantastic.
We might have been there in the back.
I'll bet yours was years ago, but it was awesome.
I always remember that one because my brother smoked some weed backstage, and he passed out and hit his head, and it like kind of fucked up my dad's like interview thing. We were going to go in the thing for that. He's like, God damn it, Ray got high on the wrong weed and shit. Like, it's, like that's what he was concerned about. Yeah. But I always remember that. I'm like, I was too young to know, like, who got high on what? Like, what the fuck?
The wrong
weed. Why is it okay that he gets to get high? Can we start there? I couldn't even watch TV for an extra half hour. But no, he, so to back up, then he met my mom. She was 17 and a half. Okay. I don't know. It was easier to get into bars back then.
But just from her, she was going out watching.
She was going out. She would like go follow this band that my dad played with. Charlie Brown's was the spot back in the day. And then there was Clockwork Orange, which after the movie came out, my dad opened up this bar club called Clockwork Orange with some friends.
And where was that?
I don't know. I think it was either between here and Malibu. It was like West LA. Yeah. It's all on this side. So we have pictures of it in the store. It's kind of cool. He has a lot of history. I mean, you could do a 3-hour episode on my dad alone. He'll throw out names you haven't heard of and big names, but they ended up together and they had my brother first. I mean, they lived together and dated and all that stuff. Had my brother, like he was 6 at the wedding. Yeah. He was in the wedding. My brother always talks about that. I realized when I looked at pictures, and it wasn't any big wedding. Yeah. It was a local thing outside.
He's like, listen, this is number 3, man. Yeah. I'm done with the
exactly,
big shit.
Yeah. Exactly. Lisa was still a part of my... Now, my mom, she was only a few years older than my half-sister. That was the crazy part.
Oh, yeah, because he had her so young.
Yes, and they used to go to blows. Like, my mom, they'd be fighting over stuff. And, yeah, and my dad was playing late nights and stumbling in drunk. And my mom, she always tells us a story about how she'd get upset at my dad, you know, for being out all night and drinking. So he'd pass out on the couch and she'd roll up newspapers and wake up Paul and Rhonda and maybe my brother at that point, and they'd like beat the shit out of him with the newspapers, like, you son of a bitch, like all the shit she couldn't say during the day.
Yeah, right.
And that was when they would unite together, you know. But my sister, oh my god, she stole the car. And at one time I think my mom was like, I was mad at your dad, so I was like, let's go together and steal his credit card. Like, you know, they were like the same age almost. And my brother, now, they were Dogtown. Like, it was right here, you know, right by Station 26 where we grew up. And that was when like the Dogtown was just coming up.
I love that about California. You guys, I mean, you really, that's the whole culture out here.
Skate.
You were just telling me recently that there's some, was it a display or something where you, there were pictures of you that you took
somebody
your daughters
had died,
to see?
Died, passed away. Mm-hmm. That's like big in the skate Dogtown community. And they were doing like a, everybody was submitting pictures and they, it was more about my brother, but I'm in it and I'm like barefoot and dirty. I mean, I didn't get to have a lot of his time because he was so much older than me, but he did throw me in Zuma Beach and teach me, you know, how to surf, by literally throwing me out when there was a riptide. That was the scariest thing. He's like, you'll be fine. It'll either carry you out 50 feet or you can swim diagonal. So, he was crazy, but he was, you know, kicked out of every school. He went to the alternative schoolhouse, which is now Smash, it's called now, is known for like kids get to wear their pajamas. It's an alternative learning thing.
Can you wear night pants?
Exactly.
That's where I'd want to fucking go.
But before, it was for the kids who were like, you know, kicked out of every classroom.
Sure.
That was him. I mean, my sister was the one who like sketched out on the beach, you know, the first like beginnings of the Dogtown logo. Like he was a part of that.
Really? That's, yeah. I love that. That is awesome.
Oh, that's, they were part of that whole.
That's history.
The surf shop on Main Street, you know, like those guys starting it. He was part of that whole, you know, in the pools, getting caught going in the empty pools. So I looked up to him because I thought he was cool, but he was scary, right? He was scary. He was definitely getting into drugs.
What's your age difference?
God, we're probably about 13 years
apart. Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. Or maybe 11, and then she's like 13. She's older. So he eventually went so far off into drugs and stuff that we saw him less and less, unfortunately. But nonetheless, I looked up to him because that whole skate culture, that whole thing was super cool. I mean,
yeah.
And I told you, Lenny Kravitz lived across the street from us for a while. That was all their group. That was that group of people that lived right there. So my mom and dad are together and my dad's trying to convince my mom's parents, my grandparents, to like, you should buy a home. So they ended up buying this duplex property in Lawndale. Not in a nice neighborhood. I never paid attention to that till I became an adult. And that's where all my memories were made. Like my whole life, I think about my grandparents' house. I mean, my mom, my grandmother made traditional Trinidadian food. So it was like roti, pilau, curry chicken all the time. She was just constantly cooking out of a huge, big steel pot. Always had parties. We had steel pan, which is what they play in Trinidad.
Yeah.
We had steel pan players live. Like our that house, my grandma's house, was the party house.
I'll
we
bet.
Looked forward every weekend we went there. My aunt lived in the front, or my uncle, depending on who was living in the front house. And they lived in the back house. And I just, that's, for one, I also looked forward to it because we got to get McDonald's. My mom was healthy before it was in style. So every Friday we go to Lawndale. The first thing my grandpa would do is he'd get us a Happy Meal.
Yeah.
So that's where, for me, like if I think of my youth, I think of going to grandma and grandpa's on the weekend. It wasn't until middle school that I invited some of my white friends to come to grandma and grandpa's thinking like, come check out my grandma's house. It's so much fun there. There's always parties and we have a DJ and there'll be like a steel pan and everyone's dancing. And I'll never forget when they were like, first of all, where's the utensils and why do you eat with this tortilla thing? And why is there plastic that's sticky on your grandma's table? I was like, it's a lot of judgment here. And like, oh, the carpets, like my socks are black. I'll never forget my friends like, my socks are black from walking on your grandma's carpet. I was like, it is. It always is like that. We wear black socks so we don't see it. That's Why'd you bring white socks?
We wear black socks.
I remember for the first time, that was the first time I thought about race, culture. We had never talked about it. We weren't one thing. We're so eclectic. We weren't waving one flag in front of our house. There were so many
That's
people.
Really interesting.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
You were already in such a diverse, eclectic.
Right.
You know, you said something to me one time. I wanted to remind you. I don't know if you remember, but you said there was someone made you feel horrible about your knees.
Yes. Well, this was around. Well, that was elementary school. Actually, that was my first interaction. There was this girl who I guess I won't mention her name. We all had a sleepover at her house, and
a white girl,
mm-hmm. and she lived in the nice side of north of Montana. And there was another friend there that was African-American, and she was saying some things to her about like she should put peroxide on her arm hairs or something like that. And then she got to me and she was like, well, your mom's a wetback. And I was like, what? Whoa. I didn't even know what that was. I was like, her back is wet? Like, is she? I really thought that it was because my mom would sweat because she did hair. I'm like, are they making fun of my mom because she's sweaty? Like, I wasn't sure. I had to ask my mom about that the next day. And that was a whole other thing. But she told me, well, you're so dark in the summer. Like, your knees get so dark. They look dirty all the time. Why don't you do something about it? Because they look dirty. I was like, I don't think I can do anything about it. It's just how they look when they fold. And I went home and she's like, well, you could bleach them. And I remember getting a quarter cup of bleach and scrubbing basically the skin off my knees because it burns you. Yeah. I did not know that. And trying to explain to my mom why I was doing it. And, you know, she was like, she always felt a little bit like that about my dad's mom, kind of would make my mom feel like about her. She'd always mention her dark skin.
Really?
Yeah. Which is interesting. I mean,
isn't it crazy that like all the shit you worry about as a kid, like, and the insecurity, like you remember that forever.
I remember that forever.
You'll remember that forever. Yeah. Someone making you feel about your knees. And then you look back at it now, you're like, how fucking.
I'm like, how stupid. I fucked up my knees. I got a scar.
And also how ignorant this girl is being raised by these people, you know, believing that dark skin is somehow bad and you got to lighten it, you know.
She also did some other horrible stuff, which is maybe too deep for this show, but.
There ain't nothing.
Okay. Well, that was my introduction to molestation too at that girl's house. We were in the bath together. We had a bathing suits on because that's what you do at that age. And
how old are you at this point?
11, 12, maybe 11, probably 11. And so, yeah. Oh, no, wait. It came out when it was 12. So 10 and a half, 11, like Mia's age.
Yeah. You know?
And she's like discussing her private parts and all this stuff. And she's got the faucet on there. And I'm kind of like, well, this is weird, you know? So she goes, go to the kitchen and get a hot dog and a zip and a sandwich bag. And I'm like, in my mind, we were as adults, we're like, oh.
Scared the shit out of me right now. That's 5 years from now for me.
I'm thinking, are we making hot dogs in the bath? Yeah. I don't really know. Yep. Are we going to boil them?
You want mustard?
I was like, I do turkey dogs.
What do you put this on your pussy?
I was like, I do turkey dogs, but
yeah.
I don't really do pig butthole.
Hold on. I know you're about to tell us this, but whatever you're about to tell us, what's blowing me away right now is this girl.
The organization of it.
She's got a routine.
Yeah, she's like, this go get a hot dog.
This is her first right
and
now.
A sandwich bag.
Heat it up until 67 degrees. And bring out a Ziploc bag, the zipper kind.
It was just the fold kind, but, you know, it was safe. So
go get a hot dog.
So I go get it, and I'm like all slippery in the kitchen and shit. Like, we get hot dogs. I come back in and I'm like, okay. And she puts it in the sandwich bag.
Oh my God. She's using it like a condom.
But now, mind you, I have no idea in a million years where this is going. And so she starts to put it inside and she's like standing up. It's like halfway hanging out. She's like, look, 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 you do it. I was like, that is so fucking bizarre. First of all, things can go inside that hole. I'm thinking you pee and you shit from the same area.
So that's your first time ever.
Why would you insert anything in there ever in your life,
right?
Let alone a hot dog and a sandwich bag. I'm so blown away by all of it. So I was so uncomfortable and I felt sick in my stomach and I knew there was something wrong, but I couldn't figure it out. And so that's when she reached over and was kind of, and I was like, oh, this, don't touch me. I don't like it. And I'm moving on. And I slept with my eyes open that whole night. Now, the reason I was there was because my mom and dad were divorced at that point. I know we kind of skipped over that, but she was working in the film industry. So she got a makeup job and it took her to Alaska for a week. She was doing it because, you know, we were apartment to apartment all the time. So unfortunately, I always think back. I don't know why I didn't just stay at my dad's. He was up the street. But for whatever reason, it would be like I'd go to a friend's. And all of my friends.
And you stay for like the duration.
Like a week.
Yeah.
So her house was the worst. I mean, her brother would like shoot paintballs towards us on the outside. Yeah, she had a snake and would make it regurgitate. She'd be like, watch this. Feed it fish and you would watch. And then she'd be like, make it come back up. And I was like, oh,
putting
my God.
Shit in her pussy and squeezing shit out
she
of the snake.
She might be a murderer. She would tease you like the snake might be in the bed with you. So like, and I'd be like, oh, fuck, I can't go to sleep. Cause
what happened to this girl? You still talk to her?
No.
She's my daughter's godmother.
Yeah, exactly. She's probably a subscriber. She's probably like, this is sounding familiar.
Hey, thank you for your subscription. We appreciate you. You're part of Night Pants Nation.
Oh, my God. But I mean, the crazy part is at that.
Hey, hold on, real quick. We do have an opening in the pussy hole area. If you want to slide your hot dogs in without taking them off, I got you.
Night pants. Make sure you use a sandwich bag.
Yeah, sandwich bag.
Be safe. You don't want to get salmonella in your pussy.
I can't get over that. Do you think that was taught?
Oh well.
Or do you think?
Do you remember the McMartin case?
Mm-mm.
Okay, it was a preschool in Manhattan Beach. It supposedly had molested all these kids, and they took them to an underground thing and cut her. She was supposedly one of those kids.
Okay.
And her mom was like on Geraldo behind a screen, but then they found out that it was all lies. They like ruined these people's life.
What?
Yeah, like 2-year-olds were like being like, did they cut off bunny ears? And they're like, mm-hmm. And then, you know, this whole family's life. Now, listen. Anybody watching or listening?
Listen, McMartins, if you subscribe, I'm not. This is her opinion.
I don't know what's true or not true.
I need your $5.
It may be that they did or didn't. I remember it coming out that they didn't. So all these kids had lied or whatever.
It's okay. We're wrong a lot on this show.
But obviously something happened.
Yeah, clearly,
you know what I'm saying?
Something happened.
So, but cut to, we're at a sleepover again. God damn it. I can't. Because you're young and you don't know.
I was going to ask you. You didn't go home and tell your mom?
I didn't.
That's what also scares me. Not every, but I would say 9 out of 10 people that sit across from me always say.
They didn't say
nothing. Well, the trauma happened until they're scared to tell somebody. And it's like, oh.
It seems so obvious.
Like, I tell Stella that all the time. Like, I think you're going to come tell me, but you may not. But I want you to know you can. Yeah. I always tell her, if you're honest, you'll never be in trouble if you're honest.
And this is the crazy part, because everyone thinks if some old man asks you to sit on his lap, or that's what it, right?
Right.
So if it doesn't look like that, then you're not sure what just happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you go tell somebody? I just told you, and we're dying laughing. Like, well, we were in the bath, and then she said, get a hot dog. And everyone's like, wait a second. So, you know, the whole thing was weird. And it was embarrassing. You feel shame.
Sure.
Because you're confused. Like, why was I in that situation? She was just mean, and she was the ringleader. But she lived in a rich part of the neighborhood, as did all my friends. I was the only one that had an apartment. Maybe there was one other girl that did. But in this group of friends, you know, my mom made sure I bused to that school because she thought, hang out with rich white people, hang out with the Jewish kids, you'll be better off. She wanted to expose me, right? That's the mentality. Coming here, she was like that. Like, oh, okay, let me make friends with American culture.
Yes, go meet everyone.
Go meet
Don't
everyone.
Isolate.
Right.
Just keep to yourself.
Right. Yeah. Don't be hanging out with these kids in the apartment. We got enough of that.
Yeah.
So she was like, go over here. And I will attest to there was great things, because I used to go to the, with the same girl's family, to the horse races and learned about betting on horses for a dollar or whatever. And I never had the stuff you're supposed to wear. They're like, do you have nice flats? I'm like, what are flats? You know? So there was good things to it. But she, one night when we were all having that sleepover, said all those racist things. Cut to a couple years later, there was drama, as girls have in middle school. And I told a school counselor finally what had happened.
With the hot dog?
With the hot dog. And she apparently did her due diligence, called the police, made a full on report, interviewed like half of my friends. And then I was like, oh my God, like this was a long time ago. So things are probably different now.
So how long, again, I'm sorry, how long from the time it happened until?
Like 2 years, like a year and a half.
Okay.
Because I was fifth going into sixth grade, and this was like around seventh grade that she's, you know, said something. So now my friends know. Everyone had figured out on their own, like, she's not nice. We don't want to be friends with her. And the counselor was trying to like get in it. And I just broke down and was like, well, let me tell you why I don't like her. It's not because she did this at lunch. She tried to stick a hot dog in my vagina. They were like, call 911.
Farmer John's or Dodger Dog.
This is like a movie, because what ended up happening is, what 11-year-old is going to keep that a secret? Even your own friends.
Sooner or later, that's coming out.
It got out after the whole, it was supposed to be quiet. They got the cops interviewing. And I'm having to tell the story like 27 times because it's so bizarre. I guess they want to make sure you're not lying. I go to school after 3 days of like interrogation on it, and everyone's singing O-S-C-A-R, that Oscar Mayer song.
Meyer.
But then people went by her house and threw hot dogs on her front lawn. It was like, fuck. And everyone was like, why are they doing
that?
I was like, it was like in protection of me, but I was like,
we stand alive.
Exactly. Hot dog in your face. It was like, oh shit. It was horrible. I was like, I'm never going to live this down, dude. But I did somehow.
Holy
so
crap.
That was my, like, and I remember, I'll never forget, I don't remember so much my mom. I think she felt really guilty. Like, you should have told me, like, why'd you want to keep going to that asshole's house? I was like, I don't know. I mean, I used to pretend like I was having nightmares in the room with her. She had a trundle bed. And I'd run across the house and crawl in bed with her mom because I was scared of her. Like, she was either going to put the snake in my bed or...
Or a hot dog up.
Yeah. Or a Cheeto in my butt. I was I don't know. Like, nothing's safe.
What's going to happen,
honestly? Open a bag of snacks. I'm like, shit, where's that going? Are those spicy? I just want to make sure. No, I got a hemorrhoid. Right. I don't know. I mean, that was my first experience with, I guess, even to this day, it feels weird to say like molested, but they're like, that's what it was. I'm like, really? Like somebody touched you or whatever, did something that you didn't want them to do. So now,
do you eat hot dogs today?
I don't. Why I don't.
I'm telling you, I'm not a big hot dog fan either. I get about 2-3 a year, and usually it's at a sporting event.
That time you saw me crying, wasn't because it was spicy.
I'm gonna be out there grilling one day at your place, looking at you smiling.
Are these too big? You got plastic? Oh, I'm sorry.
Got some extra hot dogs. Somebody get a Ziploc bag. Like, dun dun.
Oh my God. Well, she then everybody found out about it. She's mortified. Okay. So she's mortified.
She fight you
she leaves the school. She goes to a private school local. Now, less than a year later, I'm at a bus stop on 20th and Pico and she rolls up with M's, which is, if you're not Mexican, you don't know what it is. That's how we'd spray our hair if you were trying to be a chola gangster back in the day. She rolls up on me and I'm just like, doo, 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 waiting at the bus. And she's like, she claims, I don't want to say it on here, the local gang, but in Spanish, in my face. So she's like, Santa Monica 17, puta. And I'm like, oh my God, you speak Spanish? Like, that was my first thought. Like, right. You said my mom was a wetback. I'm so confused. Like, you speak Spanish? So she rolls up and says that to me, and she's with these, like, gangster girls. And I'm like, what is happening, right? What happened to you? Like, you went to private school and this is what happened to you? So she had turned.
What are you putting up your pussy these days?
I know. Like, is that a burrito? You got a whole new look. So then she tried to come and roll up on me at school, and that went my first fight. And all the kids, the whole school.
You got into a fist fight with her?
Not with her, because of course it was like the other people that she sent. Yeah. And I had a box cutter knife, and that was not a nice moment. But.
You got cut?
No. This girl told me, I guess I want to say her name, but I can't. She has such a cool name. But anyway, she was like, listen.
Well, if she's not around anymore, first name.
Consuelo. So she was like, listen, they're outside for you. Here's this box cutter.
Oh, she was
just
helping
you. Just leave the tip open. And when you put it in your hand like this, and when you sock her, just bam, from the side.
Girl,
I was like, okay.
11-year-old girl.
I wanted to shit my pants. I had full on chorro, which is like diarrhea. I mean, I just was like my whole stomach
it sounds like you were in a what do you call it?
It was like,
when they send you away to school. What do you call it?
A boarding
reform school or whatever. Yeah.
It was just a regular local Santa Monica. It's actually one of the blue ribbon best, schools here. So they're like, you got to go. And that day after school when they came, that was separate from the bus stop. I already was like, uh-oh, something's happened to her. Like, she's changing. I was trying to stay late because I knew they were trying to jump me outside. I was asking the teacher. So on question 92, it was like, you've been here for a long time. Are you okay? I was like, I was just wondering if there's extra credit. Do you need help organizing? So that's when Consuelo was like, you're going to have to face it. Like, these girls were in high school. They were like 5 years older than me and they wanted to
listen, I'm either getting stabbed or I'm getting a hot dog up.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want either one of these things. Can you take me to my car?
I ran out with a hot dog and the knife.
Like giving a dog meat and then running.
I was like so mortified to go out there because I didn't know what I was going to run into. But I dealt with it head on. And that story got twisted. It was so funny because people were like, oh, she came out there and like I did it all gangster. And I was like, really? I was scared shitless. It got stuck. And I was like, oh, my God. I like let it go and ran. But it wasn't in her. It was, another girl that was with her. So that subsided.
You stuck somebody with it? You did?
Yeah. But it just got right there. And I was like, and I freaked out. So I didn't want anything. I didn't want to have that fight. But the following year, my middle school year was so crazy. The following year, I have another group of friends. Here's these cut to these rich white kids. I was like, thanks, mom. So I'm hanging out with them. And it's nutrition. Seventh grade. Yeah. End of seventh grade. And I'm like, can I have a sip of your soda? To a really good friend, a guy friend. He gives me a sip. He's like, you can finish it. I drink it. Next period, I'm feeling weird. I'm like poking some kid. By the period after that, it's computer class. And every time you started the computer, these little wheels would go and they fell off the screen onto the floor. And I was like, oh shit, that is not supposed to happen. I start sinking into my seat because I think I'm melting. He put a bunch of tabs of acid in my drink. And I'm 12. I'm like, I got hot dogs and acid.
Holy shit.
And I don't know what's happened
to
me.
You're tripping at 12.
I'm dying. I think I'm dying. So
was he also? Was he drinking
it too? He was in the classroom and he sees me and I'm running up to the teacher.
But was he tripping too?
He was too,
okay,
yeah.
So he
just thought I wanted it, right, or it was funny. I don't know why he did it, but it ruined his life after that because he put so many tabs that it could have been attempted murder. That was the problem. They had to like pump my stomach and the whole thing.
Wait, walk us through.
So I'm in that computer class and now I'm like, this doesn't feel right. I feel like the floor is eating me. Now, mind you, I've never done drugs. I'm a little kid. So I'm thinking I got food poisoning. I'm really dying. So I run to the teacher and we're up on the top floor and I grab him and I'm pulling his shirt down. I'm like, something's wrong with me. Help me. And the kid who did it is in the class with me. And I'm like looking at him and he's freaking out. I go straight for the window, which is the roof over the school. And they can't just run. I just had to run. So they were pulling me. They tear apart. They're going through what I ate. They're tearing apart the cafeteria, because I was on free and reduced lunch.
I had to get the free lunch ticket.
Oh, my God. So. Everyone's like, why do you only pay 35 cents? I was like, what? I had a coupon code.
I used to get the green. They made us take a green ticket and had
a special ticket.
Everybody.
So shitty.
It's so terrible.
But that chocolate milk is bomb. And so I'm over there at the vending machine. They're like, what did you have in the vending machine? They're checking it out. The cops are there.
Try the hot dog.
Make sure you get a plastic bag. Oh my God. They end up getting it out of somebody and they open his locker and he has acid in there.
More.
Well, like someone snitched on him.
Yeah, but so, I'm saying he's got more in the
right,
locker.
I guess.
Jesus Christ.
I didn't even know these kids did that.
How old was he? You're 11, 12. 12. Okay,
we're both
age.
In like seventh grade. And these are the kids that at like nutrition were bending over, listening to Nirvana and like trying to asphyxiate themselves for like a quick high.
Yeah,
I should have known better. I didn't know he'd be putting shit in his drink. But he's like zip tied and my mom comes from Trinidad.
Okay, wait. So they figure it out.
He's zip tied.
The police come and get him
right
away.
They're coming to me. Now they're looking in my eye and they're like, yep. Yeah. And I'm thinking like they know something. It's all crazy. You think like everyone's talking about you around you or whatever. And they're like, yep. It's, acid or whatever. LSD. We found it. My mom, they're trying to talk to my mom. My mom's like, I'm not going to do anything to him. I know him. Seriously, it's fine. Let me just say something to him. All of a sudden, my mom is sliding across the administration table to reach him to just attack the shit out of him. And they're like, Anne, you can't do this, So my mom's gone crazy. And that was not the first time my mom in the school district, when my brother got jumped, my mom was like, I just want to talk to them. just give me 5 minutes.
Where's that box?
Exactly. So
what happens to
he
him?
He gets taken and he's young. And my parents knew his parents. And it was a rough situation because my parents believe in mistakes. Listen, my brother had made tons of mistakes when I was telling you about and went to juvie. And I think many times my parents probably wished that someone gave him a pass. He got in trouble. He got expelled from the whole school. I think he had to go to a boarding school.
Damn.
And, his mom was horrified. Like, it was the whole thing was a sad thing, but we could have made it worse with litigation. We just didn't.
I was going to say, were there charges?
They didn't have anything to take, and he's a minor. And so he dealt with legally having possession on his own. But so my mom, of course, being the hippie that she is, she's like, we're going to journal this experience. So I'm like having to journal, and I'm like, the orange is talking to me. My friend was supposed to spend the night that night.
Do you still have that fucking journal?
I do.
Anywhere?
And it's crazy. The writing looks it's all going off to the side.
You're still tripping.
The best part, though, is my friend Samantha's supposed to sleep over, and she's standing there. We had worn, like, matching, like, cross-color, overalls that day. And she's like, am I still spending the night? I'm like, bitch, I don't know.
I'm going to be tripping for 3 days.
I don't know if you're supposed to. So she had to stay. It was crazy. But he came back to school a couple months later to visit, and the entire school chased him till he peed his pants in his house. They were like, we got you, Lana. We're chasing.
Whoa.
It just became like a movement. Like, I didn't even know what we were running for. I'm like, why does everybody want to kick his ass? You know how that goes. Everybody's like, somebody's ass to kick. They felt like, damn, you did her dirty. I didn't want to have that. I don't know if it was a prank or he thought I'd like it, but
right.
That probably set me up for not needing to try hard drugs. I was cool. Alcohol.
I'll bet. Yeah.
Never tried cocaine.
Me either. I mean, I've done.
Clearly, I don't need it.
No, you don't. You got cocaine energy.
Exactly. You do. So I just never, I don't know if it was that experience, but it was bad enough for me to be like, I'm good. Like, I don't need to have, I don't like that feeling of being in control, not in control. So that was that. And that was after my parents got divorced. So, but well, while,
go ahead.
I was going to say, but while I was still having sleepovers at the other one's house.
What was it like when your parents were divorced? Did you, because you're close with your dad. So was he good about the going back and forth, or were you with your mom most of the time, or how
was
that?
It was weird. Like, in comparison to what people have these arrangements with days and weekends and
all
that.
Like me?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. With 223, 522, I hear my friends talking about that. I'm like, I have no idea. Are you talking about days of the week? So I was 8. My dad, my brother was like 13 or 14. Probably 14. Anyways, when I found out, it was like, what? I remember I got out of the car that day and like ran towards Patton's. There used to be a Patton's on Montana and a TCBY. And I was devastated. My whole world, first of all, a friend had just told me that Santa Claus wasn't real. You know what I mean?
Just getting hit from everywhere.
We were on jump rope. She's like, let me tell you. She goes, she said, and divorce, she told me before my parents got divorced, she had said, and divorce is when your dad moves to Oklahoma and you got to see him like only on the break.
Oh, shit.
So I'm like, dad's moving to Oklahoma.
Yeah, right.
And there's no Santa. Shit. So my mom, it was devastating. My mom got up one Saturday morning and like left, but she didn't leave us. She just left and like, I think talked to my grandparents. We were in her van, like her minivan. The bizarre thing was the way it worked out was my mom felt like I was still little, so I would go with her. And my brother was older and maybe would be better off with my dad, which as a mother now, I look back and think, I wonder if that was hard for my brother. I've asked him before. And not knowing that that time my brother was struggling with coming out and being gay.
Right, yeah.
So he was doing acid and all kinds of drugs at that time. So it was crazy. I felt really bad for my dad. I remember feeling really sad for him. Like, you're going to be lonely. Cut to a year later. He's like, I got me a new wife. Don't worry about me.
Was it a year?
About something like that. Like in Vegas. It was like
he likes to get married. Huh?
He just gets married and he stays. Like, my parents were together 15 years. They've been together. Him and Elena have been together since I was like 10. So like 30 years almost.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah. So, and then my mom, we slept on the floor of my grandparents. We slept on the floor of her friend Tina's apartment building. I always remember it smelled like rotten milk in there. I was like, did they spill milk on this carpet?
Right here.
where I'm sleeping right on this air mattress. I mean, we moved around and our first little apartment was behind what is now a Starbucks, a drive-through Starbucks on Pico. It used to be a Kentucky Fried Chicken. And
oh, that one right there?
That one right there. It used to be a Kentucky Fried Chicken and that wall that's there used to be a chain link wobbly fence, and we would hear people ordering all night, and I used to love to get on my bike and I would go over through the drive thru.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, that wasn't that long ago. It was at a KFC. Yeah.
And I used to
you lived in those apartments
they're
there?
Like they're it's like a not a duplex, there's three little units. Mm-hmm. Little one bedroom tiny units. Our first night there was a drive-by. It used to be a really bad neighborhood over there. And then, you know, all night long, you know, because I lived where I lived all the time. You know, we were in an apartment before, but now I'm in this new environment. It felt scary. The guys next door used to fight all the time. You'd hear them fighting and screaming. There was always cops there. They would beat the shit. There were two, there were guys that were dating each other and there was drugs and cocaine going on in there. Someone broke in and tried to like, the neighbor broke into the other neighbor's house and stole a TV. Like, it was scary to live there. It was definitely scary. And I just remember always going to, they used to get so mad at Kentucky Fried Chicken because I would go through the drive-thru with my bike and be like, can I get the little, those little baby McChickens? It was like nannies
littles,
and fried chicken.
Yeah.
And they're like, you can't. They'd stick their head out the window from ahead. You can't do it from here. I'm like, why? Just let me order. So that was my experience there. And then my mom was just always like, you know, she dated someone and that was the thing. It was like, my whole thing with her, and she knows this so I can say it if she listens to this, like, I just wanted to be enough. Like, I'm going through a family breakup. Could we just be us? You know, mm-hmm. I'm already dealing with the going back and forth happened, but it was like every Sunday, my dad would take my brother and I bowling at the bowling alley, which has now turned into a ridiculously, it's like $80 a game.
I know, it's stupid.
I still have my own bowling bag and shoes that we got at a garage sale to this day.
Do you?
Yeah. Now it only saves you like $1.25. Yeah, but I'm always rolling there like I'm a pro. I got my bowling bag. They're like, okay.
I'll see y'all on the lane.
Exactly. They're like, it's $40 though. I was like, oh, fuck. So we used to do that. And my dad would take us for a chocolate malt at Callahan's, which is now Ingo's Tasty Diner that our friends that grew up in the, you know, community in Santa Monica owned forever. when my friend passed away not that long ago, her dad couldn't take it and keep the restaurant anymore. But they kept the Callahan's look, so it's still there. So that's, I grew up right here. Like, this was all.
Yeah, you're born and raised.
When we were sick, we slept on the couch at the music store. You know, we had Nana's blanket. Like, we did our homework here after school. There used to be an Arby's. It was always like we'd get the potato triangles and a Jamocha shake from Arby's. That's how I think of, you know, growing up here. It was just all in this little 10 block radius. But that experience with my mom and being divorced was, you know, her first boyfriend, Wally, who she knows to this day. I swear to God, he used to hug her and look at me and go and wink his eye. And I was like, are you fucking with me? Like, and he probably, maybe he wasn't, I don't know, but we were vying for my mom's attention. And we all lived in a one bedroom and they slept in the same room. And then it was like, just the next person, next one. And we had to live in one of her boyfriend's houses. That was nice. It was my first chance to live in a house, but it was never my space. He didn't like the way I tapped my toothbrush when I brushed my teeth because he could hear it through the wall. I felt like I had to tiptoe all the time. I mean, I just always felt like everywhere we moved, I'm like, can we just be just us? So at 18, I moved out. And
wow.
I was lucky though, because, I mean, that's not why, but I worked from the time I was 15. I was the sample lady at Vaughn's.
They were like,
would you like to try this ranch dressing? And I took my job serious and they saw that. And the guy at the Vaughn said, I want to offer you a bagger position. I was like, yes. I was a little too young, but he gave it to me. And then I got a job at the same time at the warehouse when people used to buy CDs.
Yeah. I remember the warehouse.
And then I got 100% customer service because people were always floored that I knew every type of music.
I was going to say, you really do have really, I mean, that's a great positive to have. You have such a, I saw one of your posts not too long ago. I think your whole family went somewhere and you were all doing, you had something about Jethro Tull.
Like,
look at Lana teaching them about Jethro Tull. Yeah,
when little boys think that the flute is lame or for girls, I'm like, have you heard of Jethro Tull?
Yeah.
But I'll never forget, a customer came in, old white man. He's like, you can't help me. And I was like, he was trying to name a song. I'm like, that's Lou Reed. And he's like, how do you know? I'm like, please. I was over in this section. But if you really want a good album. So I knew everything. I mean, I had grown up with all of it. You know, I grew up with my dad. Every time it was like Martin Luther King Day, we would sit at the table. He would have, you know, talk about the I Have a Dream speech. And then we'd listen to Aretha Franklin and he'd sob at the table. My dad was so connected to every movement that ever happened. He just loves people. And it all relates to music. And music has curated my whole life. Like, I could curate my parents' divorce to Fleetwood Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's certain songs that to this day break my heart. Dire Straits. And then as I got older and angry, it was like Wu-Tang Clan.
Right, yeah. See, for me, creatively, I love the lyrics, but whenever I listen to music, I start to see like scenes I want to put together in promos or movies or clips or shows. Like, I just love.
My first breakup, like The Cure. I remember recording the same song over and over and over, so I didn't
remember
have to
double cassette.
Yeah.
Try to get that shit off the radio. Yeah.
I mean, during that time when they got divorced, it was so traumatic. But now when I look back, I could never imagine them married. Like, that's the crazy thing. Like, I don't remember going through a long period of being like, I wish they were together.
Yeah, I was the same way with my parents. Like, it was a shock at first because change was about to happen. But then it was like, oh, yes. Totally makes sense.
And then you're like, wait, I can manipulate the situation now. Like, I'm going to ask him for $20. You know what I mean? That type of thing. There was a little bit of that. But I will say, to this day, my dad never talked shit about my mom. He always, and they had fights and blowouts. My mom, during that time, she left with her pride. Her thing was, she didn't have much. She came here. She finished her high school diploma thing. Went to SMC to learn how to do hair. She worked at what is also is a coffee bean on Main Street. Used to be the first Banana Republic. Mm. So that was a little part-time job. And she wanted to prove to my dad that she could save money. And one time after like Thanksgiving or something, she had saved up on her own from whatever little stuff she did, from clipping coupons. It wasn't even from working or anything, $1,500. And she just wanted to be recognized as an independent woman who could do. My mom just wanted more. And she was a stay-at-home mom, basically. So when she divorced my dad, all of that, now that I'm older, I could look at her as a human being, came to fruition. But I was a little girl who just wanted my mom to look at me all the time. So she was struggling being this individual and growing. And I was like in the crux of all of it too, dealing with like, now I got a two places to be. I can't see my dad every day now. That was weird. But we got through it. But I will say that the unfortunate part is that she had to work all the time now to make ends meet. So there was more freedom and it wasn't like today. you know, she didn't know where I was
half the time.
And I was a good kid, but I was definitely running the streets. We used to be, so 9th Street right here on 9th and Pico, there's a liquor store, and we used to hang out on 9th Street, and it was like all the taggers. That was our little crew, and like drink. And my mom had a Subaru, and every time it would come by, they'd whistle and they'd be like, "The Subaru, Lana's mom." And we'd all duck, and she'd be rolling down her window trying to look for me. I'd be like hiding.
You'd be back there ducking.
I was like ducking. Oh my God. She found me one time, pulled me by my hair, slapped me, and my friend's following me because she wants to sleep over tonight. I'm like, bitch, I just got slapped.
It's not looking good for either of us.
Slapped her around the world. So we moved on from the hot dog, and everyone would do this to me at school. Psh, like mimic the slap. Shuck. It was so, I mean, my mom was crazy like that, but she was out there trying to do her thing. But that's when I started to dabble, because after that sleepover that I told you, when the kids were making fun of me that my grandma's carpet was too dirty and we eat on paper plates. I'm like, well, it's better. You just throw it away. That's when I started to realize I started hanging out with different friends. I made friends with all the Mexican kids, and I felt comfortable because their grandma's house was like my grandma's house, and no one was judging. And I had a great group of friends, but that led to like, my attraction was always probably towards more of the bad boy anyways, mm-hmm. but then it turned into like, I was attracted to the gangsters. And so I was over here all cutesy, my shorts rollerblading down to the Mar Vista projects. Like, it was that! Not thinking like anything about it. I was hanging out and going to these parties. I just wanted to dance. I wanted to listen to hip hop. I wanted to like go to these offsite Wu-Tang. We used to go to these little, when Wu-Tang was just coming up, these little Wu-Tang concerts. And I was in that scene, and it came with its other stuff too, right?
Sure.
And it caught up in other things. That's the crazy part, when people look at me and I'm working with this underserved youth and I have my hair, it's my PT hair, PTA hair on, as my kids would call it. They look at you and they judge you right away. It's like what we're dealing with today. Everyone has biases. Like, you don't know me. You don't know what I've been through, or just because the shade of my skin, or you have no idea. I feel like that all the time when people try to like cut you off or get silly with me at a place. I'm like, oh, you think you know. But that's how it is even nowadays. Like, people have their biases, and we're like that towards other people. It's the same thing on the flip side. People assume, you know, if you look a certain way, so cut and clean, that you don't have any history or any perspective on anything. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, maybe I don't have the same perspective, and I'm not taking away from yours, but I do have my own perspective.
I mean, I'm judgmental these days as a parent. I see a guy with a braided belt and his shirt tucked, and I'm like, this guy fucks kids. You know, I go...
Now you're going to start right looking at little girls for sleepovers. This girl gives out hot dogs.
Hey, listen, no hot dogs at their house. That's going to be my rule.
No bath time.
There better not be no goddamn hot dogs at the house.
It's funny because I tell my kids all the time when they were little, did anyone touch your pokey? Like, we still call it a pokey in our house. Anyone touch your pokey? And I'll never forget the one time, you know, my daughter was like, I think so. I'm like, who touched your pokey? Was it with a hot dog?
Was it with a hot dog?
Or a cheese sandwich?
So what age are you when your dad gets the music store?
I am just semen in his ball sack at that point.
Oh, you are?
1972. Yeah,
oh, okay.
Born in 79.
Well, I thought it was 50 years and you're only
40.
So I guess it would be.
Thanks. What are you trying to say?
My bad. I'm thinking you're 10, but it would have been.
No.
That's my bad.
Well, it actually started before that. So 72 is like, it's 1970, I guess, right? That's exactly the 50 years. He started it on Lincoln Boulevard, right across from the Boys and Girls Club. It's still the Boys and Girls Club now, down the street. He started it with a film. He was doing photography in one little studio, and he had like his drum set in the other studio. And really, he was trying to have he wanted to be a booking agent, like for musicians. So he'd take your headshot, then he'd find you gigs, which, cut to, my dad still does that today, and he'll be 80 in July. Just one.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
He still books bands. So then he started doing, you know, he's trying to make money, drum lessons. So he's doing, you know, one drum student now, doing his photography, using two of the offices up there. There was a weird little apartment building behind it, and there was a blind guy that lived there that he used to help. Eventually, whatever was down in the retail area opened up. And so it was 5 years of him doing that by himself. That's why our corporate entity is called Fernandez Talent and Associates. Fernandez talent because that's what he really wanted
to do.
That's
what he started.
Yeah. He wasn't trying to have a store or anything. Right. My uncle came with his degrees. You know, my dad doesn't have any of that. So he's got his...
That's his brother?
Yes, my uncle Victor. It was a way to get him here from Canada to get his papers and all that stuff. And he was like, come help with the business because you had a show, you had a job. Mm-hmm. And I think he had to like give $5,000 and invest in it. So he was like, I'll do accounting and help. And it was my uncle's idea, Victor, that they have the retail shop. And that is what birthed the store where you could buy instruments and rent to own an instrument, basically. And then they'd started doing repairs for instruments in the back. The school grew from my dad's one drum student to now we're teaching piano and clarinet and whatever. So it was run out of this tiny little space. And the Boys and Girls Club was across the street. So those kids would skateboard over, hang out, play guitar. I mean, that spot was a hangout. Like, my dad used to be the old man that was kind of like, shoot, all right, that's enough on that guitar. I mean, yeah. No more Stairway to Heaven. Get out of here, whatever. So, you know, bums would come in there and play on stuff. And that's where I, like, grew up. My sister, Rhonda, had her first job there. Both my brothers.
All at that location.
All at that location. My mom slept pregnant on her back in that location with my brother. When she was pregnant with my brother, with me, one of them. She always tells that story. She likes to point that out. I slept pregnant on my back before we got an apartment. She found the apartment on 4th and Ashland, which my dad still lives in, which is rent control. It's the only reason this
business... He still lives there since then?
Still lives there. And it's like $800
a month. I was going to say, what's it, $200?
It's crazy, but it's why the business is still here. He says it all the time. It's his retirement. And my uncle lives in the building, too. It was like Melrose Place. So there was Mr. Hayes, who lived across the way. When he passed away, my dad took that unit over for like $380. And that's where we all lived in our first apartment.
I see.
So... Anyway, so that's how they started the business and they maintained it with inexpensive rent. And it just kept growing. And eventually, about 25 years ago, the space became too small because, you know, we didn't have enough lesson rooms to do lessons and stuff. So they found this space on 19th and Santa Monica. They never quite had enough money for a down payment to buy a building. They kicked themselves in the head now over it. And I definitely do because it's real expensive here. We went from like, I don't know, maybe 2,500 square feet max, maybe less, to 5,350 square feet. And it was enough room to finally really build out and do what they wanted to do.
So all this time, it's only been two locations. I mean, except I know you have Culver City as well, but for Santa Monica Music Center, it's only been just the two. Yep. Wow.
Whenever people come in and they go, I remember you guys when you were on Lincoln. We're like, oh, you're like an OG customer. Mm-hmm. Like they remember the old days, but they were there for a long time, like half the time. And then maybe 15 years ago, they were doing really well and they opened up Culver City, but never bought a building. And that's what's been the big constraint on the business. I mean, it's, as you know, over 20 grand a month here. We used to sublet this back area. There was already like a law firm here. So they sublet it to them. And then one day, one of the ladies, a few times in a row, according to my dad, didn't pick up her dog shit. And my dad would like leave it on their door, like, pick up your shit. My uncle's always like, they're renters. We need that rent. My dad's like Larry David, like on Red Bull.
Yeah, yeah.
So they ended up leaving. And then we struggled with this back area. Like we always had hodgepodge renters. And then, yeah, so I never wanted to work for the family business. Everybody in the family worked. I was like, no. Meanwhile, you know, I'm bagging groceries, working at whatever, the record store. Then I got another job at Foot Locker. I'll never forget when I showed up. I showed up to Foot Locker. They're like, you're not scheduled, but I was supposed to be at the warehouse. So I had to wear my Foot Locker referee.
You wore your Foot Locker shirt at the warehouse.
I was like, they're like, could you put an apron on? Everyone's all making fun of me and blowing a whistle. Time out, time out. Dressed like a referee. That was a cool job back then. We used to get paid cash out the register at Foot Locker at the end of the day. And if there wasn't enough for you, you got paid an order. Then you would have to like wait the next day and day to get paid. But yeah, so I didn't want to work here. I was in fashion. I eventually got a job at, you know, Charles David. And I wanted to be... You know, in fashion, I was like, I don't need a job here. I moved out at 18. I was paying my own bills, all that. I was going to college full time, working full time, and just never really wanted to work here. It wasn't that I wasn't connected to the music store or anything. It was
You're a hustler. I love it.
I was just like, I don't want to work at the family store. You can't afford me. That was always the thing, right? Mm-hmm. So then as time went on and I had kids, that's when my whole world changed. I mean, I was on planes. I was flying. I was doing, you know, I have my six, my 63, my seven, doing insurance and all that stuff, making good money. We had bought a condo. Because they offered me to move out of that rent-controlled apartment. We were already, Louie and I had just got married. We were already in escrow in a condo. And they're like, we'll give you $5,000 to move. I was like, no, we were already going to move. But they didn't know that. And I was like, $25,000 and I'll move. They're like, no. I'm like, I know what you're charging for rent. So then they came back, $10,000, then $12,000. And Louie's like, just take it. So I amortized it on a sheet for him over 5 years. I was like, this is what you're going to make in the next 5 years. He came and gave us $25,000 to move.
Wow.
I was like, we're getting wood floors. And I know.
Fake wood floors.
Exactly. But we bought a condo in Inglewood at the right time. We bought for $306,000. 2 years later, we flipped it for $382,000.
That's nice.
And then we got into a house in Lawndale. And I was like, keep up with the Joneses. Like, my husband was just like, oh, shit, hold on. I'm getting my bags. Like, he grew up one of 10 in the projects. And he's like, I'm fine in a one bedroom or a five bedroom. I just don't want stress. So if it's stressing you out, let's not do it. So eventually at that was when the market crashed and all that. And my company got bought over by a big bank and they laid the account executives off first. But I was the last person because I was pregnant with my second kid. So they were kind of like, And my boss was trying to help me out. He's like, I know Brianna's birthday's in December, so we're going to wait for your layoff to like mid-January. And then they kind of gave me a package at the end. And I said, you know what? I'm going to step out and be an independent broker. I just didn't like waking up and watching the stock market real early. I was breastfeeding with a headset, trying to keep my kid quiet. You know, the whole experience was like, this is not what this was supposed to be out. I mean, when Brianna came out of my body, I remember I was like, I had a BlackBerry back then. I was like, I'll be back in 72 hours as soon as this shit heals up. And I'm going to drop her off at Louie's mom's house. She raises all the grandkids and that's it. The minute she came into this world, I didn't want anyone to touch her. No one knew better. Not doctors. Not, I don't care if you had 1,000 grandchildren. Right, yeah. I'm going to make my own baby food. I became one of those people. And it changed my whole life. I was like, I want to see every little thing that she does. I would sob.
Yeah, you're super mom.
Dude, I would sob in the car like a little bitch when I would leave for like a 20-minute meeting. I was the worst salesperson after that because people would be talking. I'd be like, all right, well, this is great. They're like, well, we want to hear a little bit more. I'm like, you know what? Fuck my product. Go with someone else. I think my kid needs a nap. I don't think you really. My tits are all leaking in the meeting. I'm like, oh shit. Bye from the other guys. I would just like die to come home. There was an earthquake one time, and I'm in the Aeon building in the big elevator. And usually, none of that shit scares me. I used to make fun of people who get scared, like scared of earthquakes, whatever. Oh my God. They like make an announcement. I'm like, oh my God, I got kids. I got a baby. Right. Like, everyone's like, everybody does. I'm like, no, but I have a baby. Like, I was like the only person who had a child. But I just wanted to be there with her. So I finally told Louie, because I was working from home and I would drive into an office, but I'd have to fly here and there. And we were like, we couldn't, all the shit I said I was going to do, we're going to sleep train the shit out of her. She's going to cry for days. And then she, you know, sniffled a couple times. I was like, there's another book about the sleeping in the same bed is really good for you. You just, you know, you morph it all around your kids. So once that happened, I told him, I said, listen, I don't know. I feel like I've always wanted to have this nonprofit. I know it's lame. I'm not going to make any money, but I want to help kids who are underserved find their passion through music because my whole life could be curated by music. And if I could help one kid find themselves through music, that'd be cool. And he was like, I grew up in the projects without shit. I don't give a fuck. I don't care about this waterfall in the backyard. Like, we can bounce out of here at any time. It's up to you. So we were also I had lost that job. So it was also like, and we're a couple months behind. Yeah. So, you know, so we moved to an apartment. It was so sad because all I wanted was a house. I didn't live in one my whole life. My parents didn't own a home. And I had finally got to that place. You know, it was like the white picket fence. The house looked cool. But when you zoomed back from the neighborhood I was in, I could never afford it in the right neighborhood. You know, my the gangsters next door were like popping guns right in the air at night on Saturday night. I'm trying to breastfeed.
Tagging your fucking white picket fence.
They were actually cool with us, though. They were like, somebody tried to steal your bike and I fucked them up. And I'm like, okay, that's not paint. I was like, cool. There was a house down the street that was like a HUD house. So we would have rotating families, and they were always selling dope out of there. And I'm pregnant one time, and this guy, I see that we lived at the end of a block of two schools. He was filming little girls behind them, and I'm 8 months pregnant, and I'm karate kick the shit out of this dude in the balls. His lady comes out. She's like, this crazy pregnant. She calls the cops on me. Crazy pregnant lady's like fucking up my husband. They went into his home and she ended up coming to my house crying, saying they found pornographic videos of her. He had naked pictures of her daughter in there. So I feel like I saved a life.
Yeah, you did. You saved more than one.
But I was like, fuck, we can't be in this ghetto. And then I had this so much, but my uncle had come out of jail, my mom's brother, and he was in a rehab program. Where is his rehab of all the places? I'm not kidding. It's at the end of the block of my new place. And I'm like, shit. He's going to see me walking the dog. Sure enough, he was like, could you wash a load of laundry? I was like, okay. I had meth addicts tapping on my door. You know, I was like, oh, shit.
Just do my whites.
It was crazy. And I was like, why can't I just, like, I get there, but it's never quite there. You know, it's yes, like, it's never quite there. Hashtag overlooked. But
hashtag overlooked.
But yeah, so then we gave it all up. And he was like, honestly, I attribute it to Louis just saying, stuff doesn't matter to me. You're on some crazy trajectory of when and how and what you got to be. We're keeping up with the Joneses. Fuck it. So we moved to an apartment on Sentinella, and it had an elevator, so that was nice. But it was way smaller. We had two living rooms at the other place. We had to get rid of a whole living room of furniture. I had sold all these like suits and things because I was like, I'm giving up a whole life of wearing Gucci shoes and Prada shoes and carrying fancy handbags to just be something totally different. And it was so rough. I'll never forget. I had bought some sandals at Ross, and he had he was just asking me nicely, like, oh, did you get some new sandals? I'm like, what? I can't buy $7 sandals because it's your money and not mine. It was like so hard for me. So, I mean, that whole time where I was just going to be with the kids and live simply lasted for a second. I quickly saw that as I'm taking to Brianna to these mommy me classes, I'm like, well, shit, I could do that. So this space in the back, I took a little bit from every little mommy and me class I did. We would paper the walls. Kids would come in and paint to like Mozart. Then we would read them a story that would be a tactile event afterwards. And then we would have a 30-minute music class. And it was great. It was called Pitter Patter Studios.
Yeah, you're always really great about that shit.
I just hustled it. And I was like, well, if I'm taking her to class, may as well make a thing out of it. Then as they got older, I was like, I don't want to fucking open this studio on Sundays to do that class. My dad started seeing me like, could you just help us a little bit with marketing? You're so good. I'm like, no, I'm not helping the store. You guys are whatever. And then it was like, I finally realized I needed to get out of the house and I needed something. But I say get out of the house. I brought them to work. I mean, Mia grew up in a playpen at the Culver City Music Center, me trying to work the store. It was just to make a little bit of my own extra income. I would ride a bike over there. And I said, I'll just help at the store. And once I dug in and saw what they were missing, I was like, I need to be a part of the family business. So I started helping them with marketing. Slowly, it was like, why don't we have the school account? Like, we've been here a long time. Well, your dad pissed off the main guy. That's what it was.
Of course, your dad.
My dad's like, you want a discount? Get the fuck out of here. I don't know who you are. And my uncle always had to do the cleanup. He was like, you know, it's just, don't worry about him. So that was the dynamic. My dad had lost his finesse. The days of the handshake and all that were far gone. And my dad still runs that way today. Like, he's a good guy. So don't, like, he gave me the eye contact and that's enough. So I went in and just finessed that relationship. And it just grew from there to my uncle saying, you know what? I've been wanting to retire. And I think this is the moment. And so I was here for like 5-7 years. I mean, it's kind of crazy. Yeah, because Mia was like a baby. And then finally, like October of 2018 was when we did the official paperwork. So like a year and a half ago of buying over, but it was already happening of like the official buy. I bought out my uncle's portion. And when I say I bought out, it was like an arrangement through the business. That was always the thing. Like, I don't have any capital or whatever. Because by then we had already moved to another apartment in Santa Monica to be closer to the kids, which is now where I live next to Donna and Stella, which that was all meant to be. I mean,
it really was. Look, I want to say this because I say this to you all the time, but I want to say this on here. Like, and I said this in the post too. First of all, I love you. I mean, you were such a like a sounding board when I, during the split, and I was all, you always talked to me so calmly and you always made me feel so good about my anxiety of being a new dad, a new single dad at the same time and not knowing what the fuck to do. And I was like, I think I'm going to come to some of those female meetings you all have and I'll be the one crying all the time. Like, get the fuck out of here, right? But you've been great to me. You've been great to my family. I just, I love you. I love your family. Louie, with all the help, with all the other stuff in here too, but also, I love, you're a boss. I love that you're a female business owner. I love that the money I pay for the space back here goes to a family-owned business that serves the community. I'm not giving it to fucking Remax entity that just, you know, does whatever the fuck they do with it. You know, it really gives back. And we have a lot of ideas and plans for things back here in the space. I'm really excited to be a part of it. Because I want to see this business get back on its feet and grow. So why don't we talk about what happened the other day? Annie's going to join us. Grab your headphones. Put your headphones on so we can hear. Do you have your headphones? Yeah. Annie, you back there?
I'm here with you, man.
I can hear you. You good? So why don't you... I want to tell it two ways because... I'll tell you what, I'll start with my what happened on my end and the first time seeing you. And I want you to tell us why you got there. You know what I mean? So for me, what was happening during, this was Sunday, the day of the riots. And again, I fully support the movement. I'm not, you know, this is just what happened. People want to know there's been a lot of fucking shit going and flying out there that's been false information and stuff. So I want to clear up some things on my end, but... it was probably around 2:30 in the afternoon. I'm on that Citizen app and I get an alert that the Shell gas station a block away where Stella and I just were before that was robbed at gunpoint. Then they set a place on fire not a block away. Now, I live off of Santa Monica Boulevard, which is an easy street to go destroy if you're just looking for destruction. They, people weren't really going into the residential neighborhoods as much. And then... there's another armed robbery right there. So I texted Donna. I was like, hey, this shit seems like it's getting crazy and it's close. Can I just bring her to your place? And she's like, sure. So on my way to her place, I figured, well, let's just swing by the studio and see what's going on there. But I had seen smaller groups gathering at the CVS and all these things. I'm like, huh. And when I pull up, you're already outside and you're like, get her the fuck out of here. You were crying. You're like, they're here. They're circling. There's a guy behind you right now. They've already said they're going to come back. So at that point, I listen to you and I leave. And when I drive down Santa Monica, I see what the guy told us today. I see 30 people tearing that 7-Eleven apart and they're tearing all the businesses in there. And I just know at this point, it's definitely going to happen. It's a matter of time. So I get Stella over. Your girls are with Donna. I tell them I'm coming back. I get here, and now you've got people out on the corner, and I just start running up into the studio to grab what I can grab. I call Annie, and I'm like, Annie, can I just rip this shit out of here and leave the cords, what fuck equipment up? And then Annie's like, I'm coming. And he and Ash, both who are here now, show up, which I cannot. I know I'm looking at the wall over here, but I can't thank you both enough for coming to help out. So, you know, we're out there. And what made you come when you came? Because you
I didn't think anything was going to happen. We're so far east.
Well, first of all, they started peacefully. And then when the trouble started, the peaceful protests went south to Venice. The people that weren't so peaceful came east. But I never thought it was going to get past Lincoln. Like
And the thing is, I just want to point out that I'm very much aware of the fact. And if people aren't, the peaceful protest and the people protesting... maybe that weren't even as peaceful, had nothing to do with the looters and the opportunistics. There's like multiple groups happening here. There's people who had it organized, and then there's some people that may even be in the community that saw an opportunity to get a TV or whatever.
Sure.
And so that's the unfortunate thing. I had an idea, like most of us who had been watching it on the news, that something might jump off, but it's going to be at the mall. I mean, maybe they'll get to Lincoln, but it's going to be west of Lincoln. Maybe they'll get to Main Street. I don't even know if they'll reach Abbot Kinney because now you're LAPD. So we took our kids to the beach because the choppers were out. It was loud. It was all hovering right where we were. Now, I didn't realize that it was hovering because stuff was happening, but we walked down to Station 26 with our bikes. We rode our bikes, actually, and Louie had walked. So we're there, and he's like, this is eerie. We filmed it. We're like, oh, my God, there's so many choppers. It's kind of hard to enjoy the beach. But it was weird. On the beach that day, it was like everybody was in a bubble. Like, we didn't know what was going on. I get a FaceTime call. Well, let me back up. Louie's boss had said the day before, lock up packages in the back, customer packages. And he's like, you should board up your windows. I'm like, I'm not going to board. We're in a doctor's office district 19 blocks from the beach. So when we're on the beach, my friend Darlene FaceTimes me. She had drove down, was in the scene. She's in front of the van store, FaceTiming, crying. She's screaming at looters, don't do this. Don't do this. This is not, you don't want to, you know, disrupt what's the protest. Like, please stop. And she's showing, she's like, there's shooting M80s, there's tear gas, there's people looting, they're smashing everything. I'm like, oh my God. And we're all sitting there talking to her like, this is horrible what they're doing to the mall. But again, I, not that the big box retailers deserve it, but I was like, that's probably where they're going to loot, the Michael Kors store, the Nordstrom, whatever.
Also who the National Guard drove down my local street to go protect, to go the protect. Nikes and the Nordstroms and the Bloomingdale's, the people who have more money than God and insurance out the fucking ass.
Right. And they're using all their resources.
All
there.
Of them.
And they're also tear gassing and using like aggressive force on like the protesters.
Innocent people, yeah.
Who are arresting people on curfew. Yeah. Like, oh, you're going to arrest that guy on curfew?
But not somebody
but not this
breaking,
guy looting right in front of you? It was just crazy. I mean, if you watch some of these videos that are out there, like, people are dropping merchandise in the middle of the street. Like, they're just, and they're pulling up in cars, and they're not even covering their faces. So, anyway, so as that's happening, I'm like, the people start talking about the curfew had just bumped up. You know, it was like 5 and I got to 4. And the lifeguard's like, hey, like he's starting to tell people there's a curfew. So I'm like, let's get going. So we're getting our stuff. We go to unlock the bikes and we're trying to ride our bikes. And I hear protesters and I start to panic because they're coming with signs. But then they're fine. I'm like, oh, it's just protesters. Okay. Then I hear smashing and yelling in the background. But I'm like, is that smashing? What is that? Brianna can't ride her bike now because the tires have been slashed, like sliced, which is bizarre and maybe has nothing to do with any of this. Because why would they just slice her little used kid bike that has saran wrap on the seat? But like, it literally has saran wrap, not from a hot dog though. There's no hot dog juice on it. I made sure of that. But we're walking now. We have to go 14 blocks. So we get to Main Street and it was so bizarre. There was this beautiful African-American woman that's all decked out like a model being filmed with a professional camera, like sauntering across the street. They're filming something. And then these 5 like white boy skaters come by and they're like, fuck 12, fuck 12. And I'm like, what is fuck 12 mean?
What's that mean?
It means fuck the cops, I guess. But I'm not really sure if they're counting the letters. I still haven't gotten into the details of what the 12 is. But they're yelling and screaming right in Brianna and me, like right in my kids' faces. And they're scared now. Louie's a block ahead because he had went first to check out, like, let me go ahead of you guys and see if there's like, people are throwing M80s. So we are hearing boom, boom, and people yelling. Then I hear glass shattering and the surf shop on the corner and all that. And people are like running now. And I'm like, oh my God. So I just said, girls, I'm becoming like the crazy mom that I am. I'm screaming at them. Avert your eyes. Do not look at anyone in the eye. Just follow me. One in front, one behind. Walk tight. We have to walk all the way up the hill with the bikes and stuff. So we just start hustling at home and they're getting tired. And I'm like, we got to make it home. Hearing all the sirens. So we get home and Louie's like, let's go check on the store. And I'm like, I don't really think we need to. He's like, let's just go check on the store. Did you call them and tell them? I said, well, I told them to like move some stuff by the window or whatever, but so it should be fine. We get here. It was like the craziest timing. We're coming up our route. You know, we take 17th. I make a right on Santa Monica. I look left, west, and I'm like, there's nothing going on over here. I look right. I see like a straggler woman talking to some homeless people near the store. She's handing them something. And now I realize she was giving them a brick or whatever. But she's looking. I go to make a U-turn to come back around. I'm kind of checking out the scene. And I notice that the pharmacy has been smashed on one door. And she's peering in the window of my store. And Louie's like, oh, look, look, look. I'm like, oh, this doesn't look abnormal. And then 5 guys, it was like perfect timing, are running towards the back window with the crowbar to just take it. And I just start laying on my horn. I'm screaming. It was like watching someone break into my house and my kids are inside.
Right.
And I'm screaming from a primal place. My phone is at 1% trying to be charged. I'm going, stop, please. That's my family business. Don't do this. And they have masks on. They've got two middle fingers up. They're running towards me and can hear, fuck you, bitch, whatever. So Louie's like, go back. And I'm like, no, I'm scared now because I don't know if they have a rock in their hand.
You don't know what they have. Yeah.
Honestly, I was like, I don't want to get, it'll be my luck. I'll get hit in the exact spot in your head and I'll be talking out of my left nostril for the rest of my life. So I'm like panicking. I'm also trying to tell Siri to call 911 and it's like, call Nom Nom. And I'm like, no, bitch. Save my motherfucking life. It's like, I'm like, call 911. It's like, call your mom. I'm like, no. So he's trying to, I'm like, film them. And we're like shaking. So I come back around and I notice that there's like a Range Rover who's following and honking at them. So they ran away. So we come across to the Maserati dealer and the owner and this other guy, he's like, hey, dude, the one guy's like, get out of here, man. We've been shooing people away, but they're coming and they already hit the pharmacy. And the other guy's like, don't get out of here. Go stand in front of your business. Go get some friends. Get over there. And I'm like, oh my God. So the other guy starts telling me they just hit my pharmacy. He's already got guys on the way with like boards. So as we're doing that, two cars block me. They're like racing around, like vroom, they're coming fast. And I just heard the detective just told me the other day about a call that someone else is calling in, seeing me be blocked in. It's kind of scary. Oh, wow. Hearing it from the perspective, like she's like, we got a call. They're like, she's being blocked in by two cars. And it was scary. Because he was behind me and I was out of the vehicle, like talking to them, like, oh my God. So we go over there and Louis's like, all the you can see everything in there. Like, if you put your face in, you see all these saxophones and guitars and everything. So he's like, we got to get in there. So I do this. I have this group text called Hot Moms. It's all my like PTA moms. And I'm like, 911, somebody help. And I love them because they will come. I mean, you could be like, I got diarrhea, and they're there with Imodium to cut to like, we're being looted. And they're like, they're there with a baseball bat and a bicycle helmet. So they ran over right away to my close friends, Audie and Ashley. They were like, do you need us there now? We're in the car. So they show up and then two more friends come and I'm panicking inside trying to scribble on a piece of paper. Do I say out of business? And then, you know, they're like, my friends are like, say minority owned. I'm like, well, that's something a minority probably wouldn't put on the window. But you know, what do we say? Do we say there's nothing in here? We're drawing the blinds. We're like trying to paper it up. We're also trying to move stuff as much as we can. And then now there's these little groups coming. And I have pictures of it from me inside of a car pulling up and they're straight coming. We're tapping on the window. And there's only three friends outside. They can only do so much. My one friend, God love her, Raquel, she's yelling. She didn't give a shit. She's like, get out of here. Go home. You know, she's trying to shoo them away. And at this point, they seem like groups of five young punk kids who, if you're standing there, they're going to go away. And that's kind of what it was at first. Backpacks on the front and the back. They're ready to loot, but they're not trying to get into it with anyone. Cut to cars are zooming down the street full speed. People are sitting outside the windows with crowbars, hammers, whatever they can, tap windows. It's coming. It's like, so my friend's husband, Patrick, is like, meanwhile, I'm still in my bathing suit and like my Daisy Dukes and my flip-flops. He's like, okay, if you're going to stand out here, you can't be wearing that. So go change. So we get in the car. We're going westbound on Santa Monica Boulevard. We get five blocks west on 14th to make a left. And there is pandemonium. It's like 60 people looting the crap out of this adult sex shop. Okay. Yeah, they got, we're the like adult driving over dildos and shit. I just
get the hot dogs, man. We don't need the sex shop. We got hot dogs.
And sandwich bags. I was just thinking, like, how do you resell that on the right, market? Yeah. Slightly used.
Yeah,
like might have been ran over. It's so weird. Just so you know, if you bought them, it belongs to the sex. And they got, somebody said they saw them with like a plastic, one of those dolls or whatever.
Just carrying that out.
Carrying shit out. Like, but they were hitting the vape shop in there. And I talked to them and I just found out that they broke the guy's wrist at the vape shop. And apparently the guy from the sex shop like had just left and was like hiding in the back or something for an hour. So that's scary. But my friend owns Truxton's, our favorite restaurant. We make a U-turn and I'm like, oh, they're looting places you can get stuff. But then I see them smash the front windows of Truxton's and I'm like, oh shit, they're coming. Like they're just smashing shit now.
Yeah.
So I call my friends and I'm like, you guys, they're already panicking. Hey, they're coming this way.
And I want to say this too, real quick, not to interrupt you, no. But this is coming off the heels of being closed for months. Like everyone's forgotten about the coronavirus. Right. Like we've been out of work, you and I both, right, for months because of this. And honestly, how many days were you open when?
Friday. They said we could be open for half days. Capacity. 2 days.
So actually, it was Friday night when they finally, right, said it. So you're like a day and a half open.
Right.
to the public again, and maybe you can get some business rolling back in.
And then this happens.
And boom. So,
and
I'm
not
sorry,
to mention that curbside for the music industry doesn't exactly
right,
work. Like,
yeah.
We're not hamburgers and pizzas. I'm not throwing a $3,500 saxophone in someone's window from the curb.
Right.
Like, that is not how those purchases happen. So anyways, we see them coming. We call them to tell them that they're coming. And they're like, we know there's a group coming the opposite direction. They just looted CVS. And they've got carts and the whole thing.
Yeah.
And there's car. He goes, there's lots of cars. They're circling. So I'm like, I don't want anybody risking their life for, you know, the whole thing. At that point, someone brandished a gun. And that's when my friend was like, I just had a gun shown to me.
Yeah, he told me. Said, I didn't see that gun. He said, somebody just got out of their car and like...
Got out of the car.
Basically showed the sidewalk, the gun. Like, we're coming.
He just said, because he had a bat. I think it was more to protect me if something happened. And a bicycle helmet. He was probably like, just go to T-ball. Oh, is there something happening? Is this that smash and grab sale they said? So he's like, you know, what are you going to do with that? You're going to end up getting shot. So that's when it got real. Like, you know, no one wants to get hurt anyways, but guns come out, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the pharmacy that's across from us, SMC Pharmacy, within minutes they had guys with bulletproof vests, the Israelis don't mess around, and AR-15s. And
they,
I was like,
sure,
please
did.
Come across the street
sure
and help me.
Did.
I was like,
well, also, you're a pharmacy. You know they're coming for your
shit. Yeah,
you
yeah.
know they're coming
I'm
for your
I'm all thinking, because it's compound pharmacy for like hormones, I always think. I'm like, what do they want them there? A bunch of estrogen? I was like, all right, there's probably like some codeine, ibuprofen. I don't know.
Trying to grow titties out
trying to grow titties. And then you're going to go to the dildo shop? I'm so confused. It took me a minute.
They did have AR-15s out.
They
there.
Did.
They were ready to go.
But that's what you needed. If you and listen, after 17 calls to 911, they basically said, listen, if you own a registered firearm, A, we're not coming out.
They
I don't care if there's guns being shown. And if you own a registered firearm, you are more than welcome to protect your own property. And that's when I was like, right, you don't even. I mean, I was texting everybody like, if you have a legal registered firearm, we need help.
Well, that's when I came back. I started hustling what I could out of here. Annie and Ash show up doing the same. And it was
the beginning.
It was impending doom. Like, it felt like zombies were here and we were all about to go under. And you just... So many things were going on. Back to what you were saying, like, there were five helicopters low hovering all day. Cars left and right. Vroom, 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 vroom. This 19th Street's a weird wide street. It's like almost like a three lane. And they were rolling in five, six deep. And I want to make it very clear. It was not, you say, all black people. Bullshit.
No.
Every race was represented in what I saw.
Mothers with children in the back seat.
Now, I'll say this. If I'm going to generalize anything, it would be age. And the overwhelming majority of the people I saw were young people. And it started getting crazy. At that point, you had left.
Yeah.
Louis took you home, and I called you, and you were like, just get the fuck out of there. It is. You called me on the way. You're like, it is madness. They are coming. They're coming. They're coming. You went home. We're still doing our thing. And then you could see the crowd get, you could see a crowd getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And your friend that drove the Subaru.
Oh, Raquel, she got her window smashed.
So she came back yelling, they're coming, get the fuck out of here. And I go, what the hell happened to your window? And she's like, it was two white girls.
Yeah,
just so
one
you know.
Wearing pink fluffy slippers and a Brandy Melville shirt.
So what happened was when the cars are pulling up, they start looting the stereo alarm store a few doors down. But just cavalier in the way they're doing it. They parked in Santa Monica
in the
Boulevard,
middle of the
in the
street.
Middle of the street. Yeah. And now they're clogging traffic for people that are coming through that don't know what the fuck's going on. And they're terrorizing people in the street, these little white girls with hammers busting through windows and shit. And you just see more and more people rolling up. And I'm telling you, and it's getting closer and closer. Louis has come back. He's standing on the corner. He and I are out there. Annie and Ash are still hustling things out too. And at that point, when they finally got out, when she came back with her windows all smashed out, and then it just seemed like 100 people on foot, and again, six deep in car after car after car.
I mean, they blocked the fire truck.
Nice cars, by the way.
Nice cars. And they blocked the fire truck from making a left and tagged the back of their truck.
Yeah, that's what you told me. Tagged that truck. So you've got fire sirens going on. It was so disorienting. It was like a war zone here.
But nobody helping us.
No one helping us. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. And I keep circling to tell Louie, like, I'm right here. The car's right here. I'm done now. I'm in the car. You're telling me to get him. I got the door open. I'm like, you can jump in. I swing to the other side, and I purposely position myself up front so I can't be blocked in.
Right.
Because I see people coming behind me and everything. And I go to get, like, anything I can of this on camera. And a guy sees me. And I've told, I've mentioned that there was a gun pulled on me. There was. But I want to make it very, if you ask my friend back home, they held me down at the bottom of the steps with a bazooka on my neck and made me watch while they took all my shit out. Like, it did not go down like that. I've talked to the detective. A guy saw me. He took a gun. He had it right here against his chest like this. And he goes, get the fuck out of here. And I'm sorry to use that word, but I am quoting. But I just circle around and I tell Louie, like, look, because he was still on the corner and didn't see it. It was between him and me. And I go, get the fuck out of here. There's guns. Just get the fuck out of here. And that's when I left. I left before.
And he still didn't leave, which pissed me off. I was crying.
He drove across, right? At that point, I left because it was happening. And you were like, get the fuck over here. I went home to get a bag. And but there was no gun pointed in my face. There was no anything like that.
It was just
and
a suggestion of like, you want to try.
And I was like, yeah, that's a good idea. You know, and then I also, part of me went out later. I was like, what? What's screaming?
Was
like,
it my is it my pants? Glasses?
Look, I'm a little
nervous. Did I have a package of hot dogs on this seat?
I'm a little fucking insecure about growing this quarantine hair out. Is this screaming? Like, because I can cut this shit. But, you know, it. And the detective, she asked me, like, what did he? I go, listen, it was like the Purge. It was like Mad Max.
Yeah.
Normally, you stand out with a mask. Everyone had masks. Halloween type shit. The skeletons, like intimidating, scary shit. And the gun wasn't, I know it sounds crazy, but it wasn't that big of a deal. But
it was the groups, the size of the people. You were overtaken. And that's what the cops
are saying. I've
seen
it in Baltimore one time, and I've told the story on the podcast. It was a bar fight that rolled out about 15 people, but it moved down the street, and all of a sudden, more people. And we were like, holy fuck. And quickly, it grew to like 40 fighting and angry people. To see that, remember, I drove Stella to her mom's first, so I saw 30 people. When I saw what looked and felt like 100 fucking people on foot out there, and then
the cars
everywhere, and people exiting the cars on, and you can
and
see it on the videos
back and picking
you have,
them up.
Like,
yeah, like,
they, look, we talked about it. It felt very organized. I talked to a friend in New York. I didn't mention anything to him. He said the same thing. It felt like the first wave was sort of hitting the shit, and then the next wave comes with the backpacks. I saw people with suitcases.
Oh, yeah. They left everyone's like, oh, this is a great trash can to sweep up the glass.
Yeah.
It was on wheels. I was like, no, they were using that to move merchandise. Yeah. I mean.
Yep. So I saw everyone represented in there. But and again, if I'm going to generalize, none of these people. I understand what's going on with the anger and the rage and all of it. I get it. I do understand
why. These people
weren't
a part of that cause.
They weren't part of that. They were, people say opportunists, but that almost sounds positive. These people were just out for destruction and mayhem. And again, I saw probably a 19, 20-year-old white blonde girl driving an Acura SUV. Like, this was not a... You know,
you couldn't racially profile.
No fucking way. And also, it's so difficult to identify anyone. People that did it right were covered. You couldn't tell age, race, sex, nothing on some of these people. So, you know, it was a fucking scary thing. And that's what I told the detective. The mob of, and I mean that like literally, the group of people that moved almost like a fucking amoeba up the street. But then on top of it, you've got helicopters going. You've got sirens left and right. You got screaming and yelling.
And the owner
and
of the other place was the one who shot the gun in the air 2 times. We didn't know that though. He was hiding in the alley to scare people. It did not scare anybody.
No, it didn't scare anybody. So, Annie, I want to hear your take from when you pulled up here.
I mean, first of all, you thanked us for coming through. I mean, we built this with you, man. Like, we know all the time and the effort and the money that you put into this. I mean, we had to save it. It wasn't a question. When we got the call, it was the craziest thing to hear. You didn't even say hello.
Help!
I said, I started to say hello, and you said, the looters are here.
They were.
You're like, at your house? Where are we talking?
So, I mean, it was instant for me. It was like, the decision's already made. You know, it's just a matter of how far did you get, and what more do you need? And you obviously needed our help, and we came through immediately. And I mean,
you did. I can't, again, I love you guys for that. You really did. You did not have to. And I know what you're saying, but man, thank you.
No, for sure, man. Like, for sure. We didn't feel like we had to, but we felt like,
because it was crazy when you got here. It was pretty heavy.
It was
really starting by the time you pulled up.
Yeah, by before we even got here, I put it on my Instagram story at the gas station, like right down the street was the armed guards, and there was just
really
40 of them just casually in there. We saw them in the back of the truck just
in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
Oh, and not coming down here.
And you know what's crazy? No. At the Maserati shop, Louis was like, there was 8 cops in there at one point, and there's nobody in there. No one broke into the Maserati shop, which is across the street, you know, catty corner.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are they in there? Like, but just not looking over here. You know, and I was on the call with the police chief, so there's some insight and I can see. But I just, to me, it was crazy to see what it feels like to have no... I mean, you're calling and they're like, we're just not going to come.
I mean, you got guns across the street. You got the owner here saying he's got a gun. I'm seeing a gun. Richard saw a gun. Let me tell you something. I never saw that in Baltimore City. Okay, yeah. This is liberal ass Santa Monica. So think about that.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's a whole other thing politically. People are like, you know, I got everything after that Fox news report came out. People were commenting, like, that's what you get, you liberal ass. How do you feel about guns? And I'm like, you don't even know me.
First of all, I'm going to say this loud and clear. Republicans don't own guns. Don't own the Second Amendment. They don't own the Second Amendment. They own guns.
Right.
They don't own the Second Amendment. There was plenty of liberal ass motherfuckers out there.
I mean, there's a lot of shops
fucking shit going too.
That didn't get looted because of it. Mm-hmm. And you know.
Well, then the next night was Van Nuys when that family was out on the sidewalk. But there's that was out by you guys, Annie, on the sidewalk.
What do they protect with?
Yeah, they had a liquor store. So they just stood out front with their shotguns, and then the police show up. Now, look, I know it's got to be weird and confusing to roll up and see a family of people with shotguns telling you they went that way. You
know what I mean? Everybody's wearing masks.
What the fuck are you all doing, though? But the news lady was there the whole time saying the looters are running. It's not these people. And they remember they cuffed them and everything else. So. Once they saw what happened to Santa Monica, and that's the other thing I want to mention, too, is I've told a lot of friends about this who live here, and they're like, didn't hear any of this on the news.
I said,
I know. Well, I can tell you we didn't because there wasn't a fucking news crew around. You got to have a news crew to see shit on the news.
Filming
down there talking about the white girls robbing the surf stores and fucking Nordstrom.
And the van store. Listen, and I feel sorry for the couple that has the optometry place on 4th Street and the sake house. But let's not get it twisted. If you can afford property down there, I mean, you're probably doing a little bit better than those of us that have to be east of Lincoln. This part of the community has always been overlooked. We pay the same taxes. We pay all that stuff. You know, we have a homeless issue. It's like we got to wait longer.
1999 South Bundy is right there. That is the Fox News and Fox headquarters right there. All they had to do was have... But no one, and they're like,
I mean, not till after, then they would talk to me.
But also, the story that we're sharing is our story, and I'd say maybe it's a 5-block radius. Imagine what was going on in every neighborhood across this nation during all this.
But our police.
So much uncovered.
It was so much uncovered. And our police was, they said, you know, we weren't prepared. And apparently, like, and this is all public because the chief went on a Zoom call with the community. And I was upset because I'm like, how could you say that you heard information that it was canceled and so you didn't feel like you needed to have tactical groups? If one thing tells you that it's still happening and 10 say it's don't, go with the one that says it isn't. Now, to her defense, apparently, you know, she's working off of a budget restriction. So every 30 minutes of overtime, they got to log it. So she's not wanting to put together some overtime tactical crew. I'm like, who the hell thinks about fucking overtime when you're, I mean, if that's your job.
Well, when we were on the phone, she's like, look, I'm at 28 minutes right now. I got to wrap this up. I was like, I haven't even got to the hard part yet. No,
I mean, this is like, you know, this was like the crazy thing that, oh, you know, they're like, not a life was lost. And that, not because of you. It's because some of these motherfuckers had AR-15s. I mean, that's why. I mean, and maybe because we're liberal Santa Monica, nobody popped off their gun because it could have been an exchange.
But also the people that were destroying things. Again, I don't think they were out
to
kill.
95% of them weren't even armed and didn't really have anything. I think there was a couple who knew that they were coming to a town
that was scared
that was
to death if they even flashed.
Yeah, they're like,
which is what I
saw. They
saw
Birkenstocks and tie-dye shirts. They're like, let me show them my water pistol.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe that's what it was. We were taken advantage of because you know, there's this ideology of like who we are, because people were definitely coming from out of town. I think they were looking. Look, there's that last video that the neighbor gave me. The girl is like
the
texting.
The one dude's running up the street with two guitars.
Yeah. Well, this is a different one where she's parked waiting and she's texting. Another car comes and then they hand her something with liquid in it. And I'm like, damn, we probably could have got set on fire, which would have really destroyed everything inside. But it was so much planning. And I don't think they really knew the area. So they'd drive around, find a spot, and then you'd see cars come zoom, zoom, zoom. They'd give you something to break the window. What was so sad about it is like, when you're watching it, people kept saying, it's just stuff. Just be glad that you're okay. I'm like, but it's not just stuff. It's my whole livelihood. Like, I don't think they understand. They might be under the thinking like, oh, they have insurance and it covers it. Well, as we know, it's not that easy. And even if it does, you're still left with stuff that insurance just doesn't cover, you know, interruption of business and things like that.
Plus, all the time we've been down for Corona and not having any money come in for 3 months.
Right.
So now it's a delayed another however many months and takes
at least
to get fucking
weeks of the windows.
I mean, come on.
And then just the 0%. I wanted to tell these people I had to put on a 0% credit card and get Megan, my friend, and haggle with guys. I slept in this whole place for 2 nights when they redid the carpets. Louie and I moved things because we couldn't afford to have a crew. We had to pay people cash to do it after work. Just the sweat equity that went into it and the sweat equity that then had to go into cleaning it up.
It goes back for decades with your family in this neighborhood, serving the community. And that's what I've said to you, too. There's so many good people coming out of
the... Oh, my God.
But those are the seeds you've planted, and now the fruit is bearing, and let people help you.
I mean, listen, when I came here, first of all, my friend's husband's like, Lana, do you have another broom or whatever? I'm like, where are you? He's like, I'm here. They were there before me, sweeping the glass up at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I had coffee brought to me. And I mean, from food and water to friends coming to help clean off the graffiti and just everything.
Annie, go back. I want you to tell your side of things too, please.
So once we got here, honestly, my biggest fear was getting mistaken as one of them, because we went around and like you said, they were like kids and little white girls and boys and stuff. So, I mean, the fact that you didn't know who was the good guy, who was the bad guy, you know, me carrying around a gun, it felt safe against looters. It did not feel safe against anybody else. Mm-hmm. So that was probably the craziest part. But by the time we got here, you were already hustling. So our main agenda was just to hustle with you. I mean, this room behind me, it used to look real nice.
It had
paintings and everything.
It looked real nice. It does not normally look like that in there.
It looks like a little casting couch behind me, but
casting.
Get the hot dog.
Don't forget those sandwich bags. Gotta keep it safe.
Keep it clean.
Keep it clean.
But yeah, we took everything, man. We you know, it went from what's vital, you know, what should we take first to let's take it all. So it was just up and down the stairs and
then it was like
and
this
vulnerable
is the rest
like
of
a motherfucker.
I mean, it's still the windows are all boarded up, so it's we were able to salvage almost everything, which was really great.
And then
we barricaded like a fucking tornado was coming. We put every goddamn desk. I told Eddie, I was like, if they want it, they're gonna have to earn it. All right, they're gonna have to earn it.
You put like two desks and a table
I didn't
in
know
front
how
of
we
the
were
door.
Gonna get in there.
I know we didn't. That was funny. That was good.
Well,
though,
now it's good because you'll be able to have that 24/7 security. I mean, a guard. You're gonna have cameras, all that Ring. That shit is here now. It is a fortress.
And the cameras that we have already, like all the footage are zooming in.
Right. And that's the other thing. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Right. Like people are like, did you have an alarm? It went off when they cracked the fucking glass. Like if they're coming in, they're coming in.
There's alarms going
and
off.
Cameras
everywhere.
Don't matter. Yeah. But also that night too, like it was about, I don't know, it was like 11:30 and I was out front smoking a joint. It was, everyone had gone to bed. And then I saw you pull out. I was like, oh, I wonder where Lana's going. You call me and you're like, hey, my friend's doing a construction thing and I'm going to go board up. So I went in and told Donna, I'm like, hey, I want to go help. And I was glad. I wanted to come here and help clean up
crazy.
And
it's
board up. It was.
Because
also, you didn't know if anyone was still coming around or if anyone was still in here. It was only a few hours after. But the other thing, too, that was crazy about all this is we're talking about 4:30, 5 o'clock. It was
broad daylight.
Fucking daylight. Yeah. Bright as shit. It was. And it was scary.
And it went on until sundown. Like it that's did. It was a long... That was the thing. It wasn't like a one and done. It was like an ongoing.
It just got started.
And then when we were driving home, they were
gunshots.
They were
all night,
driving around the neighborhood,
burning cars. Yeah.
So we weren't sure if they were going to start hitting. And that was when I was like, "Thank God I live in a shitty apartment building."
I was ready to get a hotel.
I told my kids, "I was like, we don't need a security gate.
The shit I just
that's why they don't paint it. Keeps people out."
That's exactly what we thought when it went to Van Nuys the next day. I mean, we definitely don't live in a super nice place, so we heard nothing but gunshots the entire night.
Yeah.
But we're like, I mean, they're not coming here, though, so.
Right. Okay. I know. That's what kind of made us feel safe. As my husband growing up in the projects, he's like, shit, I used to warm up the car and go back in the house and put hair gel on. Ain't nobody stealing my shit. Everybody knows my family.
Well, I want to, please, will you mention the GoFundMe? Let's plug everything right now and get it all out there, please.
So, I mean... Some amazing parents from they're called SMAPA. It's the Santa Monica, the visual and performing arts, like parents together. They put together like, that was a crazy thing. At 8 o'clock in the morning, they're like, we got a URL. It's helpsantamonicamusic.org. I'm like, wow, it points to a GoFundMe. There's two GoFundMes and they're both legitimate and they both are needed because one friend started one, Holly, right away, then another group. So they reduced the amount so that together, maybe it'll make a portion. Now we realize now. I was like, damn, I should have left it for more, but because you don't know until you get a forensic CPA person in here from the insurance company to tell you you're fucked. So even after. So that's helpsantamonicamusic.org. Also, we didn't mention this, but the lab that I was starting back here with the, you know, Logic Pro and the Ableton Live and the DJ stuff, the DJ coach with DJ Hoppa. We were just starting this partnership, which we had to pivot and move things online. So we have the DJ coach, which is a class you can still take. That's a great way to support us. Sign your kids up for the summer camp we got going. On our website, there's a link for the DJ coach. It's ranges from age to 6 and up, you know, to the novice, to the person who's been DJing and wants to learn more from a professional. But Outreach Through the Arts is our nonprofit arm where we serve kids on free and reduced lunch through private music lessons after school. We do group ensemble stuff. We have other classes. I've been on site at schools helping kids who are, you know, underserved youth that maybe college isn't an option for them. So if I could introduce them to music production, to make money, to have a real job, that was my goal. And
16-year-old Ryan Sickler would have killed for somebody right? like you in my life. Yeah.
Seriously. I mean, like we were just, Hoppa and I were talking today because I made a comment about like, well, not that, you know, DJ is the career. He's like, wait. A band maybe gets $300 playing and they got to split it with
split
six
it.
People.
Yeah.
A DJ will for sure make $300 and we can show you how to get there. And it's about finding something for kids that make them want to do it, that are happy, they're passionate about it. And in even here with the podcast and teaching them how to do the control room.
Well, we're going to do that. Look, I am a huge fan of the underdog, the hashtag overlooked, and obviously the fucking honeydew.
OTTArts.org. That's the other, that's the nonprofit that if
say
you want to, OTTArts. Oh my God. Not hotdogs.com. Oscar Mayer Wiener. No, it's OTTArts.org. That's OTTA, which stands for Outreach to the Arts. If you want to donate to that nonprofit, it's all directly funded to that program, and that will help continue the program because the store needs rebuilding, but we were housing the nonprofit in here. So this is where these kids came for their
lessons. Well, that's what we talked about. Like, we want to have these kids come in and learn how to live switch and edit and shoot cameras and do podcasting is only growing and growing and growing. So I'm very excited to be part of that because I want to help. And
that's not just to be cool and be like, oh, learn this cool thing. This is a reality. It is so expensive to live. I've got two stepdaughters that are struggling. You know, they've got great setups with apartments, luckily. But it would be a struggle to live with two or three rooms.
I know.
Hello.
I know.
I mean, we're stuck in a rent-controlled apartment. So I want to give kids an opportunity to be independent. Listen, of someone who's... This has been a humbling experience having people set up a GoFundMe. I revel in the fact that I can do for myself. I've always been independent. And... People keep
exactly
telling me, just say thank you. Let people, they want to help you. But I want to give these kids that independence. If you own if you have a trade, a skill, and you're passionate about it, you're going to be successful. And if I can harness that passion and give them a real skill that you could actually make a living from, that to me is like helping in so many different ways. It's not just the feel goods of like, oh, come play some music. It's like, no, let's really hone into that and have you build a life for yourself where you don't have to depend on anybody.
You can set your own schedule. Legit skill.
And you don't need to be in college debt afterwards. I mean,
you know what? Let me say this. If anyone's out there in the LA area and you want to help out, reach out, email me, ryan@ryansickler.com. We're going to get this thing going here shortly, hopefully. I'm not sure how long it'll take before everything's back up and running. But if you want to help out, email me. And we could use the help. Yeah, maybe you can come in and help out the kids and everything else. I think it's great.
Yeah, sponsor a kid.
Well, Lana, thank you for coming on here. Annie and Ash, thank you as well. I keep looking at the wall because you're on the outside. I know, I'm like, look at
that. That was a broad range of topics.
One more time with your websites. Give the websites again.
Okay, well, we're santamonicamusic.com. So that's our website for the store. We own Culver City Music, too, and you can access the GoFundMe from there, too. There's a pop-up, also the nonprofit. But helpsantamonicamusic.org is helping us rebuild right now. We need way more than we thought because, you know, interruption of business is the biggest problem. And ottarts.org is outreach through the arts. That's the nonprofit. So if you want to help sponsor some kids, you want to help us rebuild, it all coincides, you know,
Let's help. I love you. Listen to me. You're the shit. Ryan. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
I know this wasn't
easy. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
I know. I'm like, damn, should I have told that hot dog story? You're going to get packages of hot dogs and shit.
They're going to be delivered here. Like
I like turkey dogs, by the way. Chicken apple sausage is my go-to now. It's bigger.
It is bigger and fat. Well, thank you again. I love you for everything. And I look forward to all that we're going to do back here. That's the other thing. I just had got the first episode recorded. We're just getting started. So I can't wait to see where it goes.
I look forward to working with these guys.
Yeah, we're going to have a good time and help a lot of people.
Keep pointing at the wall.
Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. Make sure you subscribe for the Patreon show and submit your story. And make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel so you can watch the Honey Do there every Tuesday. We'll talk to you all next week.